Oh, yeah, keep that belt listed. McGregor's coming for you. He'll do you in two. 1 minute, McGregor won. Yeah.
Are you
good? What are you doing?
I was just looking at some news stories as I do before the show, so it seems like we're current and on top of things. And the first thing that comes up on my phone is President Donald Trump commuted the sentence of a man 8 years into a 27-year term for bank fraud. So classic.
That was his first presidential pardon, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Some rich guy who, like, probably duped people out of millions of dollars. I haven't read the story yet, but
I hope he's just going full. You know what? If he goes full fucking heel, he'll win for sure.
It's so funny. Like, and I you had to open it up, and I'm reading it, and just as you like hooked us up here, as we
answered the phone,
whatever. It's not really a phone. I don't feel like. I feel like Skype is some newfangled technology, even though it's 15 years old. But I guess his name is Shalom Rubashkin. He's 57.
Sounds Jewish.
And
Shalom or Shalom?
He pardoned that Arizona sheriff.
Oh, that's right. That was fucking awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I don't even know how you say it, commutation?
Okay, commuted it, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, classic.
I thought maybe you were laughing.
Like, usually I feel like it's like some, like, you know, a minority who was charged with a crime and probably didn't really do it and was sent to jail because whatever, some biased jury or he had a shitty attorney or whatever. Instead, it's like a millionaire who, like, ripped people off.
Well, actually, from my understanding, like, they do the, you know, the poor person that really deserves it and got fucked over things. But
yeah.
All of them, like Obama, Clinton, Bush, look at all of them. If you, like, look at their last, usually their last week or two in office, it's just, here's rich guy, here's rich guy, here's rich guy. Let's go for it, man. It's like, all right, well, if we're going to go down that route, so be it.
Yeah, I'm not even getting political with it.
Oh,
I'm just saying it's classic Trump in that, like, if you had to guess who he'd, like, set free first, you'd expect it to be somebody convicted of bank fraud. It's awesome.
Although, in hindsight, Sheriff Joe Arpaio is the most perfect person for him to set free. Like, a fucking, you know, not redneck, but like a racist sheriff who's very popular on cable news. Like, that's the key. He's popular on cable news. I bet we could just track this shit and see who's trending that day on Fox. 50-50 shot the guy gets pardoned.
I mean, I always say it. There's so much hypocrisy on both sides that I don't really take any of it that seriously, but I can always have a good laugh at stuff like that because it's just classic and it falls totally into that.
It's plain to type.
You know, completely. But it's like, it just made me laugh.
I thought you were laughing, by the way. I thought you were laughing when... Because I just saw the tweet, Conor McGregor's latest tweet.
Oh, pussy?
Just like, pussy. At first I'm like, huh, I wonder if Floyd did. Then I see Floyd has no intention of being the UFC. I'm like, that's a pretty good tweet from Conor.
Well, why don't we start with that then? Because
sure.
that is the big news of the day. Floyd Mayweather, I think we actually talked about this last week. He did some kind of Facebook Live or Instagram Live video where he was talking into a camera for probably like 15 minutes, and he was talking about how awesome he was and that he could go to the UFC and make $1 billion. And on that video, he said, I can come right back. If I want to, I can come right back to the UFC. I can go fight in the octagon. I can do a 3 or 4 fight deal in the octagon and make $1 billion. Remember, I'm Floyd Money Mayweather, and you motherfuckers love me, and I love you motherfuckers. So that was like about a week ago he said that. And then Joe Rogan on his MMA podcast deal that he does almost like once a week now, I feel like, he said, Floyd talked about it. This is apparently one thing I can tell you. Dana told me that Floyd wants to make a deal on the UFC, like legitimately. So I texted him, Dana, is Floyd really talking about fighting MMA? He goes, yeah, he's fucking crazy. I told him he'd get killed, but he's still talking about doing it. Now, today, it came out, Dana White has confirmed this, and he was talking to Brett Okamoto of ESPN. Dana said, we're talking to Floyd about doing a UFC deal. It's real. He was talking about boxing Conor McGregor. Was that real? Have you heard Floyd talk about many things that aren't real?
Yes.
He usually tips his hand when he's in the media, and then that shit ends up happening. We're interested in doing something with Floyd. Everything is a realistic possibility. Mayweather versus McGregor fucking happened. Anything is possible. So that was Dana's response today.
Dana has learned the lesson of the Trump era, which is, I don't fucking know. Anything can fucking happen these days. Sure, why not?
That's why I'll never get ahead. I can't make myself do that.
I know. It's just like, I mean, everything about this sounds like it's really stupid. Of course Floyd's not going to do MMA. He's 40 fucking years old and he can't really fight. But like you said, well, we didn't think Conor and Floyd would happen. It's like, yeah, no, that's true. We probably didn't think that, you know, the President of the United States would have a rivalry with Rosie O'Donnell on Twitter. But these things happen in America these days. That would be potential felon Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, because she's trying to bribe senators to vote against the tax bill. Yeah. I saw that. That was funny.
I'm like, the sad thing is, I think she's like, I don't think she's, well, I don't think she's, I don't know what the fuck Rosie's doing. I do hope, though, that Trump just says, you know, I am technically the head of the Department of Justice and the FBI, and I can order people to be investigated. So let's just take a look at Rosie. Let's see what's going on there. It'd be fantastic if he starts, like the way FDR would use the IRS. I'm sorry, the IRS to intimidate and to look into some of his foes. Well, I want Trump just to do that, but only to, like, celebrities, so it's all hysterical, but nobody, like, who matters in the world is hurt. Like, how fucking great would it be if it turns out that in 4 years of being president, Donald Trump's accomplishments were cut taxes, investigate Rosie O'Donnell. Like, that'd be a pretty fucking Trumpian way to do business. I'd like it.
I would not be surprised if that is how it all panned out. Back to Floyd, though. Obviously, the story's gained some steam, but then later Floyd today essentially said he wasn't interested in doing it. But let me pull that story up. Give me a second.
Which is you know, the smart move on Floyd's part. Let's be honest here. I mean,
well,
if he joined the UFC, we would have found the one guy on the roster that CM Punk could beat. And how about that for buys? Can you imagine? I bet that does a million buys. If you did Floyd versus CM Punk in the Octagon, can you just imagine the fucking weird ass, like, the commercials you could run on Raw? People would lose their shit. They'd be crazy. Let's just do it, UFC. We talked about this before, having freak show fights and everything. UFC should totally embrace it. I don't know how we didn't think of Floyd versus CM Punk. Duh. Oh, you know why? Because we can't think of the crazy that 2017 and hopefully 2018 brings us.
Floyd said this today. If I could make over $1 billion before, I could do it again. If I chose to get in the UFC and fight three fights or fight four fights and then fight Conor McGregor, I could make $1 billion, which I can. I could do it in three fights or even four. I could make $1 billion. If I choose to get in the Octagon and fight. So, I mean, that was his response, which...
There's got to be more to it somewhere.
Well, he said, we just don't know what the future holds, and I don't look forward to getting back in a boxing ring. That's what I don't look forward to. I'm just saying I could. I'm not doing it, but I'm saying that I could do what I could do to make $1 million quick if I wanted to. That's what I was saying. I never said I was going to fight in the UFC. I didn't say that. I said if I wanted to and that I could. Could and would is two different things. I'm not going to do it, though. And then McGregor went on Instagram and put a picture of himself holding both belts, just with the word pussy underneath it. And it's like right after the fight with Alvarez, where he's like got his chest puffed out and he's holding both belts. He's got the three-piece suit on and everything. It's classic. It's already got 420,000 likes on Instagram. And I mean, there's truth to it. Like, Conor would destroy him in the octagon. It's two different sports, and we talked about this before the boxing match. It's like, Floyd's going to win. He's a boxer. It's a sport Conor's never done, and it would be the same thing vice versa. I don't think the general public gets that. I mean, if the fight ever did happen in the octagon, people would buy it and have no idea that Conor would kill him. There's something to that. Floyd's not going to do it because Floyd knows better. And two, he wants to control everything. He wants to have the production and the share of the purse and all the revenue that comes in. And there's no way he would ever put himself in a position where he could lose at this point because there's no benefit to him. He's got $1 billion in the bank. And, yeah, a few hundred million more would be great, but he's not going to risk being embarrassed in a cage fight.
Now, the only reason I could see Floyd – well, obviously the only reason he's going to do it is money. But the only way I can see money being an option is, for all this billion-dollar talk or whatever, say he does have hundreds of millions in the bank somehow, that this moron hasn't just spent it all on bought strip clubs and shit. Maybe he could look at it and be like, you know, if I did two fights, after taxes, I might actually be able to call myself a billionaire. I could see that. I would risk my fighting legacy and say, fuck it, I'm a billionaire. Like, that's a pretty badass thing.
Why not just fight Pacquiao again? He'd make $100 million doing that.
Maybe he could make more for the UFC. I don't know.
But he couldn't, though, because if it's under if the UFC is promoting it, he's not going to get the same cut. I mean,
maybe
unless
he will.
UFC is going to run a pay-per-view and pay somebody more money than they're going to make, which seems a little far-fetched.
They did it before boxing, though.
You know, I know.
They let it happen.
Again, yeah.
And this company is, you
know, that was more loaning McGregor to Mayweather for a weekend as opposed to Mayweather coming into their house and taking all their money.
You know what I mean? If I was at UFC, I would 100% agree to the exact same terms as before to get him in because you have Conor fight Floyd in the UFC, you're going to make all that money, and your guy looks like a badass. Total win-win. Well,
I guess that's the question. I don't think this fight's going to happen. But okay,
Conor and then CM Punk. Do that?
Or do they give him a guy who's 0-1?
No, you can't risk. You have to give him Conor. That's the only one. I'm not even joking when I say.
Couldn't they put Artem in there to take a dive or something?
Yeah, no. Again, CM Punk would beat him. Like, I'm not even joking about that. I seriously, presuming that Floyd hasn't had any wrestling training at all, I don't think he has. But if you took Floyd Mayweather right now, put him in the octagon, I bet half the people at UFC 219 in the crowd could beat Floyd in a real fight. Because Floyd would have no idea what's going on. And at least those people know what an armbar should look like. And that would give them a world advantage. I mean, it's like if you have two monkeys and one of them has a stick, they're both still morons, but at least one of them's got a stick. Floyd would get murdered. He's not a fighter. He's a boxer. He's a very fun little boxer. He ain't a fighter. Fuck.
What do you make of Dana saying they're talking?
Like I said before, I'm actually kind of serious. I think Dana's just like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And sure, we're going to talk. I truly bet he looked at him before and goes, this isn't going to happen. He was so adamant that the last thing wouldn't happen. And now that everything's gone belly up, Dana's got to be looking around going, I have no idea what's happening in this world anymore. Weird shit's going down left and right. I think he's just long for the ride now.
Well, you got to think WME or Endeavor or whatever it is now. I think officially their company name is Endeavor, but you know they'd want it to happen. Holy shit. Like, the Fertittas, the old regime might have shied away, like, this is too much of a circus, we're making good money as it is, this will tarnish the image or whatever. But I don't get the impression Endeavor gives a shit about that. They just want to make money.
First of all, I'm not saying Endeavor, fuck that. WME, I'm like an old school wrestling fan. I say Titan.
WWWF.
Yeah. WME, yeah, they're whores. They just sell out for anything, which... whatever, maybe it works. They are one of the biggest companies on the planet.
Pretty successful.
Maybe the biggest entertainment company in the world. And I wouldn't be totally surprised, though. I mean, if Floyd does like to abuse women, WME's executives, they also like to abuse women. It's a bit of a natural fit. So perhaps, you know, birds of a feather, these guys got to stick together. These fucking new Me Too bitches, they're getting too strong. The bros got to bro down and lock arms, not in a gay way, and stay strong. Got to help each other out.
Yeah, so that's your Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor news of today. Crazy times. I again, don't expect anything of it, but I was wrong before, too. So we will see. Maybe Dana's right. You never know. This past weekend, we had a UFC on Fox card. This was UFC on Fox number, what was it again?
I don't know. The guys are out for lunch. It's Chicago, you know, Illinois got a lot of unions. It's union
26. Okay, UFC on Fox 26. I can always just use Wikipedia if you just want to, like, lay those guys off.
No.
Okay, I mean, keep them on board.
Businesses exist to employ people. I'm not going to just fire people because there's a more efficient and better way to do something. That doesn't make any sense.
So this was on Saturday night, December 16th, at the Bell MTS place in beautiful Winnipeg, Canada. Attendance was 8,862 with a gate of $781,000. In
the most Canadian-sounding arena name, by the way. Like, everything else in the world is arena or center or whatever. There's this, the place. There's this, we're going to go down. Where's the hockey at? Oh, down the street at the place. Oh, okay, thanks. Hey, now, hoser.
In event, Rafael Dos Anjos defeated Robbie Lawler, unanimous decision, 50-45 on all three cards. Good win for...
54.
I mean, I don't know what to say about this one. I don't know if RDA is this good, if Lawler's lost his step. He supposedly hurt his knee during the fight, and he's older, and he's been in all these wars. Does Robbie Lawler from 2 years ago get taken down by a lightweight Brazilian? I don't know. but Dos Anjos looked good. He got the win, and he's in the mix for the next title shot against Tyron Woodley. A couple of years ago, I don't think anyone would have ever imagined RDA moving up to 170 and looking this good. He has truly been impressive at welterweight. I can't fault the guy at all. And this is a good win, man.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. Lawler seemed to get old in the middle of the fight. He looked kind of old before the fight, even. Like, he just, I don't know. Guys get old, they age. RDA's got the good steroids at Fountain of Youth that he's found somewhere, I'm sure, whatever. Like, he's doing very, very well. It's going to be kind of weird if these two fight, because it'll be like, I'm sorry, Woodley and RDA, because that will be the saddest example of, like, two, like, a former champion moving up in weight to fight the current champion. This should be some sort of, like, epic match, and everybody's gonna be like, ah, oh, those two fucking guys, like, ugh. Like, it's like 250,000 buys in October. This feels like the kind of show they run in October in Vegas.
Yeah, it's not a fight that would draw, but they might be the two best welterweights. I mean, Rory McDonald is always out there in Bellator, but I don't know what to say about RDA. I am truly impressed that he's been able to turn it around like this, especially against bigger dudes. Like, when you saw him at the weigh-ins and Lawler, in the cage they didn't look that different, but at the weigh-ins it was like Lawler towered over RDA. There was a significant difference in size. And granted, RDA is only 3-0 at welterweight, but all the wins have been against good guys. You've got Tarek Safady, Neil Magny, and now Lawler. And his only losses in the last few years were to Eddie Alvarez and Tony Ferguson. So it's not like he lost to scrubs. And he went five rounds with Ferguson. It was a competitive fight. So, I don't know where RDA goes from here. I mean, I could definitely see a Covington fight next for him with, you know, Covington calling them all filthy animals and RDA hates them. And that could be a number one contender fight. And I think that would put the winner over the hump and not necessarily make them a draw, but make that fight with Woodley much more anticipated than it would be right now, I think.
Yeah, I would think so. I think that kind of makes sense really overall, because Woodley probably does need shoulder surgery. He's avoided it for a while now, and I think he's kind of like hesitant because I suspect he wants to see who he might have to fight. If it's a, you know, real welterweight, maybe it's one thing, or maybe he thinks, hey, maybe I'll get St. Pierre, so he doesn't want to blow that. But, yeah, I mean, that is just a ridiculously natural storyline to just emerge. It's one of those things that just falls into your lap, and if you're the UFC, I guess you're kind of lucky that the odds are you can make that fight any time in the next year and a half or so, and you know Covington will piss the fuck out of a bunch of Brazilians. I would be curious to see that fight in Brazil. I really do wonder if Colt Covington can fight in Brazil ever again. I don't know if that'll be possible, but if it is, I'd love to see those two in Brazil.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, though, because you know Covington's going to call him a fake Brazilian and go that route because he moved to the States.
Yeah. He's been doing that left and right. It's hilarious. Like, you knew it was full of dirty, filthy animal. That's why you left.
Like, it's pretty good. It works.
Was it you that sent it, the video that Covington posted?
I don't know.
Or maybe I just saw it on my own. I think he posted something about, like, this is what's wrong with Brazil. It was like something where some really horrible thing happened. Like somebody got beat up on the street. Like an old lady got robbed of her purse.
I saw that video too. Yeah,
I can't remember what it was, but I remember just laughing, going, "This man's a genius."
I liked I think it was on Instagram. He put up a picture. He just did a Google search for I forget what it is, like Brazil problems, and it came up with like the crime rate and like how it's got all this crime and like violence or whatever, and it's just hilarious. He just screenshotted it and put it up as like an Instagram post. Brazil problems, I think, is the Google search. But he's the problem with him I'm having is it's like too much. Like he's just throwing. He's got to be more selective with the shit he puts out there because I feel like he's just throwing everything at the wall to see what'll stick, and it kind of takes away a little bit because it seems forced, but. I mean, he's making some waves, I guess, but there's like a threshold where you're speed. Angela Magana.
Trump speed, you know, you gotta move. You can never stop. If you pause for a second, you're out of the news. I think he gets it. Plus, as annoying as Magana is, Covington can fight. Like right. I think ultimately, you can get away with anything as long as you fight. Like I'm annoyed with Conor right now because he hasn't fought in a long time. But if he's out there winning, like I just watched this random Conor shit today. I'm watching all these this clip where he starts leading the crowd in a song, and this where Jose Aldo's just sitting there, and he's got this look in his face like, fuck, this is the most humiliating thing in the world. And I'm watching this going, I miss this man. What a genius. God, that was awesome.
Best ever. He like, I always say Rock is the best pro wrestler ever. I know that's like blasphemy for Flair or Hogan fans or whatever, but if Rock was the best ever, he was very good in the ring and he was the best with promos. I feel the same way with Conor. He's very good in the cage and he's the best with promos. Like, if you combine both things, he's the best ever to do this shit. So, go cry about it, I guess. Robbie Lawler in other news is now 35. He has had he's 1-2 in his last three. He got knocked out by Woodley, and he lost this decision pretty soundly against RDA. But the thing that frightens me the most about him is he's gone to decision. Listen to this. Since 2013, split decision Rory McDonald, decision loss to Johnny Hendricks, finished Jake Ellenberger at the end of the third round, decision Matt Brown, decision Johnny Hendricks, TKO over Rory McDonald in the fifth.
That was so brutal.
Split decision win over Condit, five rounds. Knocked out by Woodley in a minute or 2 minutes. Three rounds with Cerrone, decision, and then this five round loss. He's put all. Damn. He's taken a lot of tread off those tires in the last couple years, and it's just like I want to say it's time for him to retire. I'm sure there's some fights left for him, but I don't see him as the top guy in that division anymore. And he's 35 and been in so many freaking like classic wars. It's just like, I don't know. It might be time.
He was having wars at 19.
Right. The Diaz fight. I mean, the Nick Diaz fight.
His first fight in the UFC with Aaron Riley, UFC 37, one of the greatest fights of a generation. There was Lawler's coming out party. That was a ridiculous war. He was 19 fucking years old. 16 years later, he hasn't improved. He just keeps getting hit a lot and hits people back. It's a hell of a strategy. It's entertaining. But, God, when you really put it that way, this run he's been in the UFC, how long, all those five-round wars and getting beat up. And, man, I'm now watching Dos Anjos just tee off on him. What the fuck? This second round is more brutal than I remember. Holy shit.
He had like a 40-punch combo.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Point up against the cage, like the right side of the cage.
That's happening right. This is
brutal.
Ridiculous. Yeah, Lawler's got to stop. He's got to get out.
Lawler's still got a chin. It's not like he gets knocked out or goes down.
Yeah,
but,
that's the problem. That's even worse.
I agree. I agree.
Although, you know what? Maybe the damage is done.
I don't know. Well, the sad thing I feel like with Lawler is, like, you and I know he's a great fighter, and he's been in all these wars, but it's like no one gives a shit about him. Like, I hate to say that. Like, I'm sure his family does. But as far as, like, the fan base goes, it's like this show did garbage ratings, like terrible ratings. I should pull them up. It was down, like, 30% from the page
viewers,
Van Zandt. Yeah, it was down, like, 30% from the Paige Van Zandt card last year at this time with Michelle Watterson. Like, I don't know. 2.1 million viewers is the fourth lowest number for a UFC on Fox broadcast to date. And, I mean, there's been 26 of them. We were just talking about that. So it's like you're number 22 all time. And it's like RDA's got a bit of a name. He's a former champ. Lawler's a former champ. But it's like Lawler just – there's no charisma there. He doesn't really – I don't want to say he doesn't promote. I'm sure he goes to the shit he's obligated to. But it's part of the game. And if he had – you know, Chael Sonnen's personality, holy shit, he'd be one of the biggest draws of all time.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
there's nothing there.
Like, he does what he can. Like, to the extent that he can cut a promo, he does it. Like, he's not one of these guys that sticks his head in the sand. But, yeah, he's kind of dull, but he knows he's dull, and he likes his fight. Like I kind of said earlier, though, I do kind of wonder with some of these people, when they talk about how, you know, there's no way to cure CTE and you can't reverse the effects. Maybe you really do get to a tipping point. You might as well just keep doing what you like to do right now and enjoy the time you've got until it goes. And in that case, I wanted to see him fight Melvin Manhoff again.
He can't enjoy getting beat up like that.
I don't know what else he's got. I don't know. Guys like fighting. He's 35. He's got millions of dollars. He's still doing it.
Yeah. He's just one of those stories that kind of bums me out because it's like he should have been a bigger star. He should have made a lot more money, and he's taken a ton of beatings. And I just wonder what the legacy is there for him. Great fighter, welterweight champ at a time where the welterweight division was pretty freaking good. But I don't feel like he's going to go down in history as, you know, this legendary fighter, which he probably should have been. And part of it is he was kind of boring. His personality was dull.
I think he'll do okay as far as he's got that legacy that's pretty solid for basically being a pretty sure thing for a great fight. And I think that's how he'll be remembered. Like, you know, he won't be remembered as an all-time legend per se, but very few guys are. But I think that your MMA fans who like the sport a little bit will remember him for 3 or 4 years after he retires before they move on to something else. And honestly, that's a lot longer than he's going to remember most of his fights, so that's good.
I mean, look at this. 2014, 2015, 2016, he pretty much won fight of the year across the board. In 14, it was against Hendricks. In 15, it was Rory McDonald. And in 16, it was Carlos Condit. Like, and you don't win fight of the year, like, on some quick win. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no.
It means you were in a fucking bloody war that took a year off your life. You had three of them 3 years in a row that were considered better than any other fight of those years when we have 50-plus shows a year. You know what I mean? Like, the guy's amazing.
I bet maybe once, on average, once a year over his career, if not more, he's had a fight where everybody goes, that was a really good fight, but holy shit. I bet there's a lot of that. Like, every year, Robbie Lawler was just in something where people are like, yeah, that was a really great fight. Lawler got the shit beat out of him, but he still did it somehow. That was really fun.
In the semi-main event, we had Josh Emmett defeating Ricardo Lamas. Prior to the fight, Emmett missed weight. He came in at 148.5, so he missed by 2.5 pounds. So he had to forfeit, I think, 20-30% of his purse to Lamas. But Lamas agreed to the fight. He signed off on it, said, sure, let's do it. Again, Emmett took this on short notice because Jose Aldo was originally scheduled, and Aldo moved to the Holloway fight, which he lost. And then in this fight, Emmett won by knockout at 4:33 of the first round. And this was a brutal knockout. Lamas just was out cold, face planted, done. And Emmett got the win. I mean, I don't know if you consider this a tainted win because he came in overweight, but again, it was short notice and Lamas agreed. So to me, it is what it is.
I mean, it's possible it's tainted, but if this was like Emmett's first time trying to make 45 and he didn't do it, that'd be one thing. But he's fought at the weight before, and you know, he missed weight. It sucks, but it happens to guys these days more and more, it seems. And he knocked the fuck out of him. I mean, it's just like it's what the division needed. Some new blood there at 145 pounds. They got somebody. Hell, we got somebody that Max Holloway hasn't fought yet. That's really rare these days. So good for him.
Tough loss for Lamas, though. Third-ranked guy in the world. Had this fight lined up with Aldo. You think if he beats Aldo, he'd be probably number one contender at featherweight. And now it's like he's fucked. He's 35 years old. He just got knocked out by an unranked guy. He's going to need a bunch of wins to even get back in the mix now. And it's like he took this on short notice and fought a guy who missed weight, and then he gets knocked out. Tough day at the office for the bully.
Everybody that was booked for that fight lost.
Pretty much, except Josh Emmett, I guess.
Well, I meant, two out of three, the original book. Oh, shut up.
Then we had, prior to that, Santiago Ponzinibbio defeating Mike Perry by unanimous decision, 29-28 on all three cards. To me, Ponzinibbio was just the more, like, diverse, well-rounded striker. He was mixing in kicks and had better movement. I feel like Perry was just trying to move forward and was taking shots. I had Perry win in the first round and then lost the second two. It made me sad because Mike Perry's like truly a weirdo. He's got that eyebrow tattoo. And like at the weigh-ins, I don't know if you picked up on this, but they had the stare down and Perry got close to him and was like sniffing Ponzinibbio like a dog. And then they asked him, oh, why were you sniffing him? He's like, I wanted to smell the estrogen. It's like, he's so fucking weird. Awesome. And different than every other fighter around. He's kind of got like a Jersey Shore sort of thing going on, but also a little, you know, on the spectrum maybe. I don't know what's going on
I think the world needs to back off a little bit on the spectrum talk. Some people are just stupid. I think he's just a dumb human being. Really good at kind of what he does. I don't know if he's really good, but pretty good at what he does. I guarantee you, though, Mike Perry has been overserved at a bar, stumbled into somebody, poured his drink on that person, and then blamed them for what happened.
Oh, and beat the shit out of him.
Yeah. Or at the very least, really intimidated the shit out of the guy until his point where his friend's like, oh, shit, Mike's dead at it again. And they kind of pulled him away. Yeah, it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to bump into him in a bar. That's for damn sure.
I wouldn't want to be at a bar where he's at. I feel like you've done something wrong in your life if you're at the same bar as that guy.
Maybe. Have you seen the videos he does with his girlfriend?
Oh, no.
Like, they make bets on fights, and then the loser, whoever loses, like, has some dumbass punishment. And, like, I guess she's, like, a tennis pro or something.
What?
And yeah, his girlfriend is supposedly a tennis pro.
Mike Perry's girlfriend is a tennis pro.
According to her, yeah. I don't know if that means she, like, works at a club and is the tennis pro there as opposed to being on the WTA.
No, I'm just impressed that Mike Perry is in the same social circles as somebody that's ever held a tennis racket.
Yeah, so anyway, one of them was she had to, like, bend over down the other end of the tennis court, and he got to drill, like, 20 tennis balls at her, and, like, he couldn't hit her. I don't know if he was intentionally missing her or what, but it's so stupid. And then the other one, he lost, and she, like, waxed his nipples or something. It's very odd. Oh, it's a very odd gimmick.
No, I'm really sad that he didn't win. Oh, this is just.
But it's not based on him winning. They bet on the fight cards.
No,
like,
but I mean,
pick winners.
I'm sorry he didn't win because we'd be exposed to more of him.
Yeah,
that said, we can just do him and Robbie Lawler now. He wanted it. They both just lost, yeah. And that'd be great. That'd make me very happy. So, yeah, they should.
Yeah,
do it.
It doesn't seem like we're going to get Mike Perry and Darren Till now. Ponzinibbio versus Till would work, though.
Yeah, isn't Till fighting someone?
I don't think he's booked for anything. He wants Wonder Boy, but Wonder Boy doesn't want that fight. Or I should say Wonder Boy's
dad. They were scheduled for February or something, and then it came undone or something. No, Wonder Boy wants RDA.
Dad of Wonder Boy got involved.
Goebbels?
What?
Because Wonder Boy looks like a Nazi.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I knew it was a Nazi reference. I just didn't pick up on it. In the opener on the main card on Fox,
I don't want to say Hitler. Hitler didn't have any kids. In fact, Joseph Goebbels' kids were considered Hitler's children. That they were the ones that he looked at. Hitler was a
Hitler had, ones he looked at.
Like he was like the those like the kids in his life. They were like his niece and nephew type of deal. But like he was very close with them. Hitler apparently like it wasn't like an accident that he had kids. Like he did not want to have children, which I find very odd.
When you have kids, you don't have time to kill all those Jews and try and take over the world.
Bullshit.
It's a full-time job.
Bullshit. That's the whole point of being a megalomaniac. I mean, they all want to secure their legacy and have things go on. Kim Jong-un's dad had him.
Wouldn't it have been weird if Hitler did have kids and, like, they survived and got out of World War II somehow and they were, like, still alive today? That'd be really fucking weird.
They'd be millionaires. They would have made so much money.
I bet they're hiding in Argentina right now, and maybe
Tim Kennedy.
Tim Kennedy's looking for him right now. Mm-mm. What are you doing over there?
Drinking water. I had a tickle in my throat.
That sounds really gross.
No, the thing is, if Hitler had children or any linear descendants, we would know about them because they'd be celebrities and they'd be making a lot of money right now. This is what our society is. Anybody with any kind of notoriety, we just look at them and go, oh, somebody will support them. Richard Spencer would invite them to parties or something. I don't know. Or they'd have
a reality show, maybe?
Yeah.
Like Keeping Up with the Hitlers?
Yeah, 100%. Or they'd be like, maybe they'd go the alternate route and be totally saving Jews and things like that. Like, there have been relatives of some of the high-ranking Nazis that kind of had to dedicate the rest of their days to helping the Jews for some weird unknown reason. They're all just really invested in what happened there. So I'm going to guess that little Adolf Jr., if he existed, would probably be the German ambassador to Israel right now. And boy, wouldn't that be awkward at customs.
In the opener of the Fox card, we had Glover Teixeira defeating Misha Cirkunov by TKO in the first round, 2:45 of the first round. This was a weird fight. Cirkunov was like destroying Glover on the feet, wrecking him up against the cage. I'm like, ugh, Glover's old. This is over. And then Glover kind of just got double underhooks, I think, and took Cirkunov down in the middle of the cage, took his back, was working for a choke, then got mount. He flattened about on his stomach and then just landed punches to the back of the head and it was over.
Yeah, it was the most impressive Glover Teixeira's looked in a long time.
But he got his ass kicked for the first minute.
Yeah, but he hasn't even done that in a while. You know, he's looked like shit for a while, and at least he beat a dude in the first round as a top 10-ish talent. Yeah, I was like, all right, good for you, Glover.
Enjoy your
run in Bellator.
The most fucked up thing of this was that Glover went into this fight as the third-ranked light heavyweight in the world. Like, only Gustafsson and Voltron are ahead of him.
It's possible. It might be even true.
It's crazy. At 38, for him to still be around. And they were talking, like Cormier was talking, you have an impressive win on your title shot. I don't think Cormier really meant that, but Glover claimed that Cormier said that to him. And then Glover went out and had an impressive win. And, I mean, I think Glover's only a year older than Cormier. So, I mean, it's not that far-fetched for them to fight. But I don't know. I can't imagine Glover ever getting another light heavyweight title shot. But you never know. Voltron gets injured and Gustafsson weighs 250 pounds right now. Glover might be fighting in Boston in a month.
Well, it's It's weird how the light heavyweight division went from basically the strongest division in MMA for years, the biggest draw. It's now Glover Teixeira might get a title shot. It's really sad. Although he does live in Massachusetts or one of those states. He's a hometown guy.
It's Connecticut.
I was going to say Connecticut or Massachusetts. It's one of those two.
You know why the only reason I know it's Connecticut? Because I think we talked about this before, but it's Danbury, and I saw a weird ECW pay-per-view there once.
Danbury, Connecticut. Yeah, there's a lot of wrestling that's happened there over the years.
Mm.
Otherwise, why the fuck would I know about Danbury, Connecticut?
I don't know. It's near New York City. I think a lot of people who live in Danbury drive into New York or take a train or whatever.
That's a really big fucking area, isn't it? That's a lot of people in that New York metropolitan area.
Yeah, it is a large city, yes.
You know, I hear from like Danbury, Connecticut. Like, I kind of heard about that. It's like, oh, yeah, it's just across the street from New York City. It's like, oh, okay. It's not like Milwaukee. Like, Milwaukee's an hour and a half from Chicago. It's not right. 20 minutes.
Right.
Fuck you, New York.
On the prelims, I'm trying to think what caught my eye. Anybody jumping out to you on the prelims?
I doubt it.
The one thing I liked was Julian Marquez. His name is Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
What kind of nickname is that?
He's obviously Cuban, and...
But it doesn't make sense. Like, nothing even happened during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
No, but it's got the word Cuban in it. For most people,
yes.
For most of these guys, that's good enough. Like, I've heard of that. Like, they're
can he just call himself, like, Havana? Or,
well, he's,
I don't know, Cuban?
No, Cuban Missile sounds kind of badass.
Like it wasn't even their missiles. It was Russian missile. Like, what the fuck?
He's a missile from Cuba, and he's creating a crisis for people. Like, that's the origin of his name. I don't know.
If you're American, do you say, I don't even know. What would the American equivalent be to that?
The Cuban Missile Crisis. I don't know. And he is American, so who knows?
Like, the Boston... You come from Boston, and you call yourself... Matt Boston Tea Party Grady?
That's kind of...
No one does that. It's weird.
They named an entire political movement after the Tea Party.
Right. What happened to that?
It's still there. It just was successful. It did what it needed to do.
All right.
And then they elected Trump.
Who else? Galore Bafondo lost. He was the guy who chucked that Irish guy down on the ground and knocked him out. Chad LaPrice beat him by TKO.
Oh, there was one. Was that the fight? I think it was him where he just literally ran around and did nothing until, like, I think the second round, and he got hit by one knee and got killed dead. I think
that might have been the Nordine Taleb Danny Roberts fight.
That one, I think there's like two fights in a row like that. But it was a black guy that was running around. I think it was Bafondo.
Yeah.
Because he had, like, Bafondo, a funny name, yeah. Because, and he just didn't do anything. He just...
Oh, you're talking about Olawale Bambose? Oh,
there we go. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, everybody. Bafondo and Olawale Bongase. I'm going to remember those two. But yeah, he's just so ripped and jacked and ran around and didn't do shit for the whole fight. And he got hit by one knee and got... annihilated with it. It wasn't like a super hard knee, but he was just dead. And then he's on Twitter and he's like feuding with people. He's like, hey, you guys don't want to see blood. You don't understand this. And somebody's like, well, people pay for this. He goes, it's mixed martial art. It's an art. And sometimes, and he actually wrote, art takes time. I'm like, are you serious? You fucking dickhead. You're a coward inside of a cage and you got knocked out. Way to go, dipshit.
I didn't watch the fight pass prelim. There was only one fight, but Jordan Meehan defeated Eric Silva by unanimous decision, 30-26, 30-27, 30-27. What the fuck has happened to Eric Silva? Like, what a disappointment he turned out to be. For a little while there, he felt like, oh, this guy's going to be something. Like, he could be a star. He's winning fights. He looks pretty good. He's having exciting fights. And he's just totally gone to shit with going 1-4 in his last five.
Remember, it was like, I don't know, a couple shows back, I was talking about how sometimes these pay-per-views have these, they're really deep, and, you know, years later, you look back and go, wow, Tiago Alves fought in the undercard of that UFC 66. That was really, what a really deep pay-per-view. Well, this is like the bizarro world version of that, where, what did like Jordan Meade and Eric Silva, those guys are actually pretty big names, like an up-and-coming guys at welterweight. Now they are opening the Fight Pass show on the like one of the lowest rated UFC on Foxes of all time. Like, what the right. hell? I feel like in 10 years people look back at that and go, oh, look at that. Huh. Wow, Jordan Mean. Eric Silva on the undercard. That's kind of a good fight, wasn't it? And they'd be like, no. No one watched it. No one cared.
Eric Silva's just done, I think. It's weird because sometimes he looked great, and I just remember vividly that Matt Brown fight. It was a fight awesome. Night card. It was so awesome. It's one of those under the radar fights that was I remember legend. Dustin Poirier against Korean Zombie too, like around that time. That was really good. Awesome. And there are a couple of fights like that that were on not Fight Pass, but Fight Nights. And were really, really good, but not a lot of people saw him, and nobody remembers him now. But the Matt Brown fight was epic, and he's had some good wins along the way, too. But he seems like he's done. Might be Bellator time for him.
Oh, yeah, he's got Bellator written all over him. Oh, yeah, that's a good one for him.
Somebody who didn't have a good time at the show was Tim Elliott. He was originally scheduled for the card, and I think whoever he was supposed to fight pulled out with an injury or something. And then this guy was supposed to debut in the UFC. His name was Pietro Menga, and he came in and wasn't going to be able to make weight. He was going to come in, I want to say 6-7 pounds overweight, and Elliott said he didn't want to fight him and was turning the fight down. Then Elliott went on Twitter and bitched that he wasn't going to get his win bonus. UFC was going to give him his show money, but not his win bonus. And Elliott bitched about it. Like, he's like, it's not fair. I did my job. I showed up. I made weight. I should get paid my win bonus. This isn't my fault. I've got a mortgage. I've got a kid, yada, yada, yada. Do you think Elliott has a gripe there? Should he have got his show money and his win money? Or does the UFC owe him nothing? Where do you stand on that?
I mean, legally, he's entitled to whatever the contract says, obviously. That's a cop-out answer. That's the problem. Like, my brain immediately starts going there. It's like, well, I don't know, it's between two people. I don't really care. It's up to them. And if they all agree to this, such is life. I feel like this is how they treat people. I know historically they've just always given people their show money. And I don't think they're under any legal obligation to actually do that. I'm pretty sure that they just do that as a matter of, you know, good housekeeping. And I think that's appropriate. Giving a guy his win bonus also, I don't know. I think they don't want to set that precedent where, because some of these guys could have pretty decent-sized win bonuses. And, you don't want to take that away from them. I would just toss a guy a couple of extra bucks or whatever, maybe under the table, but so to speak, like don't make it public type of deal. But I mean, you get your show money, and usually they try to rebook you real quick. And I think as long as the company's doing that, that's fine. I would feel more sympathy for him if he was willing to fight that dude with even though he's down 5 pounds, then I'd be like, oh, okay, but like. Not that you should ever have to fight a guy 5 pounds bigger, but don't say you want your win money if they're saying, hey, go out and fight this guy. And the guy's on short notice, and it's probably not like it's actually like a legitimate size difference. I'm guessing the guy's also at the same weight anyway. So, I don't know. You're getting paid a lot of money to do nothing. It's good. That's a pretty good gig, and you're going to get another chance. That's free money, dude. Enjoy your free money. You didn't get beat up in a fight, and you got money. That's a really good deal.
Yeah, I'm with you. It turns out it looks like he's going to be on UFC 219 against another promotional newcomer named Mark De La Rosa, who's a 9-0 fighter debuting in the UFC. I think he's
married to Nico Montana Stewart from The Ultimate Fighter. I just read that today.
Was now Montana De La Rosa. So they would technically be the first married couple ever to fight in the UFC.
I think so, yeah. I guess they're not the first couple, obviously, but yeah, the first married couple. I guess, I mean, yeah. It's not that impressive when you realize, like, wait, women, what have they been, has it been 5 years?
I think 2012 Ronda debuted.
Holy shit, women have been around for a while now.
Like billions of years, yeah.
And they still only have one person in the 145-pound division.
Yes. Yeah, there's not a lot of women of that size.
Honestly, after 5 years, there's not really that many women, period. Look at 135 doesn't really have anything interesting going on. 125, nobody even really knows what's going on. I don't even know what that exists. 115's been pretty good, so I'll give him that.
I think we're still years away from, like, the Rousey effect, where girls grew up watching MMA and thinking that, oh, these women are my heroes and I'm going to get into it. Like, right now, you've got a lot of fighters in the UFC in their, you know, early, mid-20s who grew up with it and idolized, you know, your Randy Couture, Chuck Liddell's, Tito's, Matt Hughes, those guys. That hasn't happened yet for women. So I think we're still in, you know, growing pains right now until, you know, 10 years down the road probably when all these kids grew up watching MMA. Granted, women aren't watching MMA like men, but there's going to be something there. Like, I grew up watching Ronda Rousey. She was my hero. You know, that hasn't happened yet, but it will.
And just, you know, even if I don't really necessarily think that Ronda will inspire too many people to actually fight because
she lost.
Not just she lost, but fighting is it's a weird, you know, it takes a special kind of person to fight, especially if you're going to be a woman where you're going to probably have to pretty much just be straight fighting. Like, they're almost all going to be that way. Whereas the men, we have so many, things built in institutionally for men athletically that prepare you for a combat sport. So it's a little easier for, you know, to pool talent for men. So, but yeah, you know, I think just having the avenue open for women, you know, just knowing that you can try it. And yeah, if you're some parent, you're not a good parent, but you're a parent, we'll say, and you got a 6-year-old daughter who's into fighting, if you're a bad parent, you go, well, I guess maybe she could make money at that someday, so you encourage it.
I'm not doing that. Friday night, December 15th, Metro Radio Arena in Newcastle, England. Yeah.
I'm just thinking of that. He posted on Twitter, I don't know if it's today or yesterday, about your son wanting to turn down the radio because he wanted to ask your daughter something. It just,
yes.
Your daughter's response of, what's up, Coop? I just laughed so hard reading that before I got to his response. Was just, what's up, Coop? Like, she's like, yeah, what's up? Like, we had to turn the radio down. Everybody, let's pay attention. What's up?
All right. Yeah, I had reasons today. Oh, good. Turn the radio back up. That was literally how it went. And she's like, oh. Something like that happens every day. Just, I don't always remember to write them down. My whole Facebook is just geared towards, like, when I'm dead, somebody else can go through it and look like, ah, this is kind of interesting. That's my whole goal.
I just nominated somebody to carry on my legacy when I die. Because I don't know if you got that message from Facebook, but I got one.
No.
And it's, I don't know if I got a message or maybe I just stumbled upon it when I was, like, fucking around with my settings. But you can nominate, like, one or two or three people, whatever, to take over your Facebook account when you die.
Ah!
And then, you know, send them a message and all this stuff. So, I nominated my brother. I'm like, make sure you do something fun with it. That's my only thing off my will is, make sure there's a funny joke.
Oh, I want my funeral to be like a party, like keg stands and stuff. I don't want it to be sad. I want, like, wrestling music played and, like, all sorts of weird shit. Balloon animal.
I want strippers.
Or maybe, like, use my body like a pinata or something. Like make it fun, you know?
I want them to bury me after the doctors and medical people that I'm donating my body to have finished with it. But I want it to still be an open casket.
Oh, like with, like, your brain ripped out and stuff?
And, like, all the scars and the cuts and everything.
Yeah.
You can see where, like, I want people, before the last thing they see is to see what it looks like when you get, like, a cut on your forehead stitched up by a C student.
That's also pretty good. Or like shoot the casket like out of a cannon or something. Like just something fun for like the kids.
Viking funeral.
Yeah. I don't know. Funerals don't have to be sad. They're only sad because we make them that way.
No, I think so, I'm guessing they're kind of, you know, it is still a dead person. It's because no matter how much fun you want it to have, it's
the celebration of my life. If people are sad, I'm going to be pissed. The one thing I want everybody to do at my funeral is have fun. That's my dying wish, okay? Fuck. Just give me that.
Fine.
You're all beating me up while I'm alive the whole time. Just give me that one thing in death. Fuck. Michael McDonald defeated Peter Legere by unanimous decision in England. I think McDonald broke his hand during this fight and didn't look particularly great, but he got the win. I saw the x-ray. It's a nasty break on his, what is that, your pointer finger? Like there, it looked rough. Valerie Letourneau defeated Kate Jackson. And unfortunately, James Thompson lost by guillotine in a minute 33.
Yeah, this is a really great performance here by old. Oh, actually, Michael McDonald. You said Roy McDonald, I think. I got really confused. Yeah, I mean, Michael McDonald.
I'm pretty sure I said Michael.
I maybe probably did. Hey,
Tyrone, roll it back.
Tyrone?
What did he say? Oh, did you say it right? Oh, fuck you.
Yeah, you're right. Anyways, I think it's been like 12 years since McDonald last fought. And you gotta ease yourself in there like an old person into a sauna and not into a sauna.
Yeah, but now you saw that X-ray of that break, it was bad.
Was it his hand?
It was like, yeah, it was his hand.
He's had hand problems before.
Yeah, he's gonna be out a while. It looked nasty. Like, Google it, like find it. It's worth looking at because like I've never seen a break like that. Granted, I don't look at broken hands X-rays very often, but it looked nasty.
You should just keep abreast on the latest in orthopedic surgeries and, you know, setting bones.
Keep abreast on orthopedic surgeons?
Yeah, so you can understand the breaks of hands better, so you have better judgment of these things.
I am growing breasts, so that could be a possibility. In other news,
I'm just
going to
let that one go. I don't know what the hell that was.
I'm gaining weight. Oh. I got to lose some weight. My pants are very tight.
Sweatpants are your friend.
Yeah, but I gotta like go to work and like have a belt on and stuff. I gotta lose a couple pounds. I'm working on it. I'm down 5. There's a few more. Yeah. I feel like I've gained a pound every year for like the last 15 years, and now it's time to lose them.
Yeah, it happens.
Michael Bisping has been ordered to pay $400,000 to his ex-manager.
$400,000? I thought it was $40,000.
$400,000. I don't know if those are in pounds or in USD, but coming off 2 straight losses, this probably isn't the best news. He's been involved in a long-running lawsuit with ex-manager Anthony McGann and was ordered to pay the Wolf Slayer founder over $400,000 after a long-running trial. The 11-day circus raised the ire of the judge and even saw a scuffle between Bisping and McGann. At the heart of the suit was a management contract between the two men that was allegedly signed in 2005, just prior to Bisping's long UFC run. McGann alleged that he was owed a substantial portion of Bisping's earnings from 2005 to 2011, and the judge ultimately agreed, awarding him more than 320,000 British pounds, which is about $426,000 in American dollars. The Manchester Evening News reports some of the quotes from the judge, who was clearly not enamored with either man. The judge said McGann had greatly exaggerated his claim against the fighter and put forward false documents and false evidence. But in a damning decision, he said McGann's evidence in court varied between the aggressive and the obsequious. In a number of respects, his evidence was, in my judgment, plainly untruthful. I don't know how he still got $400,000, but the judge went on to say, Bisping was a more straightforward witness, but like McGann, he was guilty of tailoring and trimming his evidence to suit his case.
That's what trial works? All right.
Parts of his evidence were incredible and untrue, and his description of the facilities at the Wolf Slayer gym was a confected story. The judge also stated that the two men certainly inflated Bisping's expenses for two of the years, allowing him to defraud the Australian government in terms of taxes. He commented on their supposed scuffle during the trial as well, something that neither man denied happening. Finally, the judge said that they still need to sort out who has to pay the enormous legal fees from the long trial.
Australia?
He's claiming that they hid some money when Bisping fought in Australia.
I know it was Weiss Australian.
I mean, I'm guessing like the Rivera fight, maybe. That was years
ago.
It's
Weiss Australian also.
He wouldn't award cost to Bisping, even in relation to those issues about which Mr. McGann has sought to deceive the court, but also said it would be an affront to justice to make Bisping pay McGann's legal tab.
I have no idea. I don't know if this was a jury trial, bench trial. It's England. It sounds like it's England. Was it? Yeah. I have no. I mean, the concepts are the same more or less, but there are just gonna be nuances. They're different. Sucks to fuck up like that. I mean, that's a big hit there. That's 400,000.
Things like that are always weird because, I mean, managers all obviously want their cut. They're trying to help fighters and make the fighters the most money they can so the manager can make more money too. And if Bisping's hiding money and he had a contract with the manager, he had a contract with the manager and he owes him that money. To me, it's kind of cut and dry. And the judge ruled on it and said he owed him that money.
I'm surprised.
Granted, people, I think everyone's impression is that managers are scumbags and they're trying to make a buck and they screw over fighters. And that probably happens too. But sometimes maybe the fighter screws over the manager.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's possible.
Oh, for sure. There's a lot of guys out there who bring along fighters when they're new or whatever. And once a fighter gets to a certain level, they leave the guy. And that's kind of the nature of the business. If you're anybody in the world. You know, you get to a certain level, and you need management that can represent you at that level. It's fine. Right. It's like, you know, if the president of Coke came to me and be like, "Hey, Mike, Coke's being sued by Pepsi. Can you help us out?" I'd be like, "I don't know if I'm really qualified for that one. That seems a little bit above my pay grade." But then I would just say to myself, "Yeah, I'll give it a shot. Let's go for it. Let's see what we can do here." But yeah, they're big boys. They lost, and it's weird. I'm trying to. I'm guessing it was a bench trial, and in which case it would have to be the judges reading off a decision like that. It kind of, I mean, I'm guessing if you read the whole thing in context, the whole decision, that these weird quotes don't sound as weird, because there's been a number of, like, I've been in court before and I've been arguing a motion, and kind of the worst thing you can hear is when a judge starts praising your case a lot. Because usually, if you're not a dick lawyer, the judge is going to rule against you. He tries to make you feel good about it. Like, they'll pick a hole and be like, "Well, you screw up A, B, and C, but you're still going to win because of this. And you did this is so really great and smart, but I'm going to rule against you." In this case, it sounded like he's going, "You're all a bunch of liars and frauds, but you're less of a fraud, so you get some money."
Yeah, I was trying to find out more of the details from the case, but like this Manchester Evening News article isn't real helpful.
I don't need to read it. I know exactly what the case is. I had a contract. The manager got so much of the money. Bisping looked at it and goes, "This is bullshit. I'm getting ripped off." He probably is being overcharged a little bit. So, Bisping tried to hide some money. The manager knew he was hiding it, or, you know, never heard about the money, and then he found out after the fact, brought the suit, and the judge looks at it and just like, "You're scumbagged. You're not being exploited." You know what? I bet if Bisping was not successful as a fighter, if there wasn't as much money at stake, I bet the judge doesn't reward him. But I think the judge probably looked and goes, "Look, you don't need any protecting. You're a multimillionaire. P.S., you brought shame to us when you lost to George St. Pierre. Shame." The English are big into shame, you see.
On the topic of Bisping, he's in kind of a Twitter feud with Jorge Masvidal. They had a couple scuffles back during you know, the lead up to UFC, what was that?
217.
And almost got into a brawl, and Masvidal's calling him a bitch and all this stuff. Then Masvidal released, this Twitter exchange they had, which was actually kind of amusing. I'm having trouble finding it right now. But it was basically, direct messages, and Masvidal screenshotted them and put them out on Twitter.
That's a bitch move, man. You don't expose some private conversations like that. You can't pull back the curtain. You're breaking kayfabe. If you can't trust the boys, who can you trust?
Let me see if I can find it. Jorge Masvidal. How many Twitters do you think Masvidal has at the moment on Twitter?
I mean, how many followers?
Yeah, what did I say?
How many Twitters? Like, I don't know, one?
How many Twitters does he have?
How many followers? Let's go with the... $103,000.
$44,000.
Fuck me, I was going to actually say something low like that, but I'm like, but he's kind of been in the news a little bit. He kind of got a little bit of a rub there. Then I realized, he doesn't have hits. I noticed on Twitter, the more I get into Twitter, which I'm fucking loving, I notice that if you're an attractive girl, they seem to have an abnormally high number of followers, and they're not like celebrities at all. They're just regular people, but like, oh, that girl's kind of cute. They probably get a lot of dick pics.
A lot of those followers are fake, though. They're all bots. You can buy followers. It's pretty pathetic. Yes. There's a thing where you can search Twitter handles and see what percentage of the followers are fake. Even half of Trump's are fake. He's got 40-something million, but only 20 million of them are real people or something.
Oh, yeah, there's this chick, Sophia Helwani, who's on Twitter. Mm. She's not related to Ariel Helwani, but she's into MMA, and she's, I don't know if she's verified now. She's got, a lot of followers, but she does, I think she's from England. She's very, very right-wing and into MMA, but... her big thing is she's always tweeting this weird shit where she's calling out these celebrities for having fake followers. Mm-hmm. And I'm always lady, who gives a shit? She's like, President of the United States, you have 40 million followers. Half of those are fake, Donald Trump. Why don't you acknowledge what Putin is giving you fake followers? I'm like, lady, I don't think he has anything to do with this stuff. I doubt that the president's out there just buying up followers to make his Twitter account look a little more... Okay, never mind. This president would do that. But Obama probably didn't do that.
There's websites you can go buy 10,000 followers right now for $100 if you want.
If somebody tells Trump this, he will have a billion followers next week.
I got the direct messages here from Masvidal. Masvidal writes to Bisping, "Hey ho ass. Quit talking shit to me when UFC team and staff there and acting like a man. Let this 155-pound end your racist ass, you punk bitch. You rip my flag and sit on my Latin fighters' corners. Damn right you won't get in there with me. You know I am going to hurt you and keep hurting you. Not going to knock you out quick. I'll punish your ass for the disrespect you bring. Just sing, pussy. Don't run your mouth or run from the fight. You had chance to talk like men in private. You chose to make a scene in front of UFC fans and staff. You are such a hoe."
This is a DM?
Yeah.
And he says UFC staff? That's weird. Yeah. That's a weird thing to say.
Then Bisping's response is, "Fuck you, little bitch. Get a life, you sad fuck."
Bisping's awesome.
And then... I feel like I'm 5 years old reading this, but whatever. Masvidal said, "You are my life till I end you, ho." Bisping writes back, "You're a funny guy. I'm not wasting my time on an absolute no one that nobody cares about. Quit trying to get famous by dropping my name."
That's true.
Masvidal writes back, "I could be nobody, but this nobody will fuck you up, and you know it. Quit talking shit to me when you see me."
I mean, the shit all being in a direct message is weird. That's Nick Diaz territory.
I don't know what to tell you.
He's just talking shit. But in theory, he's not talking shit. He's making threats. It's shit talking, by definition, I think, has to be in public. You're trying to publicly run someone down. That's the whole point of shit talking. If you're just saying it to somebody in private, yeah, it's just a threat. Which is why he's him referencing UFC staff and everything is weird. But maybe just into planned. I was going to say anticipated. He thought he would eventually one day release all this. I don't know. Good for you, Masvidal, though. You know, he's got something.
So, in closing, this is the last little tidbit we get. Bisping writes, "It's a two-way street. Okay, man. Listen, I'm not interested in any beef. You do your thing, I'll do mine. Remember, you started this. But as I say, I'm not interested anymore. If you want to keep it up, you're on your own."
Yeah.
So Bisping tried to end it.
Eh. Again, he's probably sitting there going, "Is this for real? This guy."
You know what I say? Fucking let him fight in England. Who gives a shit at this point? Like,
yeah.
Bisping should be able to beat Masvidal. He fights at 155 pounds, and they can hype it up. There'll be hype behind it. You can put this direct message out there. You've got the clips of them arguing backstage and walking around the hotel or wherever they were.
It's kind of a bitch move.
They can make it work.
It's kind of a bitch move, though, if you're Bisping. Like, your retirement fight, here's a lightweight. Come on.
Right.
Also, if you lose.
I agree, but he's also old and washed up and has one eye and got the shit kicked out of him by Dan Henderson 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, he's not that good.
No, but
who's he going to fight?
I don't know, but in his mind, he's a former champion. He just lost for the first time in a while, and he wants to compete and fight a big name. So
if he fights a top five, top ten middleweight, he's fucked. He's going to get fucked up.
He should fight Vitor.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm fine with that. But
or whoever, or not Uriah Hall, no. Yeah, just Vitor. Vitor would work. I was trying to think of who Vitor was fighting. I'm like, you could fight the winner of that. I'm like, oh, wait, no, not Uriah. Actually, Uriah Hall I think Bisping could win that fight. I just think it's very sexy for a retirement fight.
Yeah.
He could beat Hall. Bisping's not bad. You know, even though he's not as good as the guy that knocked out Luke Rockhold, he's still a pretty good fighter, but let's do Masvidal or Vitor Belfort or Dan Henderson for the rubber match.
Dan Henderson would be okay too. What else? Oh, speaking of people losing money, we were talking about Bisping, but Fabricio Werdum.
People investing in Bitcoin. Oh.
Fabricio Werdum was fined $600 for throwing a boomerang at Kobe Covington in Australia. So that court decision finally came down. That comes out to $460 in American. The charge was common assault for hitting Covington with the boomerang in the neck last month. Werdum did not appear at Downing's Center local court, but the matter was adjudicated without him. That's pretty much it. $600 fine.
If you're the judge in this, that you gave him like an extra $50 like he owed you, just for the most stereotypical thing you could ever do in Australia. Like, really? This sounds exact. Like, how is Werdum not an American? How is he not me? Doesn't it sound exactly like some story you'd hear from me? Or be, yeah, I was down in Brazil and I got really drunk and I threw a boomerang at someone. Like, it's exactly what a moron like me would do, not a cage fighter. Here's your $500 fine, dipshit.
You got to think Werdum's looking at it like, that's the best $600 I've ever spent in my life.
Oh, that's a great
Think of all the press he got from that. And, you know, granted, I think Werdum's a dick, but he's probably a hero in Brazil for doing it. And he got a lot of press, and he main evented that card, and he won that fight against Tybora, and I mean, $600 is nothing. It's a drop in the bucket, and he got his name out there even more.
Yeah, I don't think that we should. If I was Australia, I wouldn't let UFC heavyweights come in, because Werdum obviously threw a boomerang at a man, which is awesome. And then Frank Mir blamed kangaroo meat for a steroid failure. It's like every time somebody in the UFC goes to Australia and gets in trouble, they just double down on a stereotype. Like, the next one's going to be, like, the next guy's going to get hurt, and he's going to be like, I saw a crocodile, mate, and I played knifey spoonie with them or something.
Yeah, or you could say you missed weight because you ate too much crocodile or something.
Oh, no, you missed weight because you were drinking a Foster's.
That's a good one. You missed weight because the crocodile pulled you. Are crocodiles in salt water? Remember Nick Diaz complaining that he missed weight by, like, 9 pounds because he drank salt water surfing or something?
Yeah.
Remember that one? Good. That was a good one.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm just trying to think what else you would do in Australia. I try to cut weight, but because the bathtub's down here, the water fills in a different direction. My body couldn't handle it. I actually put on weight because of it. That's how Australian water works.
Yeah, I couldn't poop because the toilet flushed the wrong way. Yeah.
He threw a fucking boomerang at a man in Australia.
Pretty awesome.
Like, I'm trying to think of any other country. It's the only country, I think, in the world that has, like, its own national weapon. Like, like, when you think of, like, Japan, you may maybe throwing stars or something, but, like, there's multiple things you use. America's got the gun. I mean, the rest of the world pretty much does things associated with us with guns, I guess. But you wouldn't throw a gun at someone. But there's no Irish weapon. There's no French weapon. Maybe, I don't know, the fucking, whatchamacallit, the gay sword fighting one. But, you know, nobody's throwing a, what do you call that? It's an Olympic sport of all fucking things.
Fencing,
yeah. No one's throwing a fence, what they call it, a fencing rod at someone. He threw a boomerang at somebody. What a hero. He is a hero.
Fencing rod. On the topic, while we're talking Verdum, we might as well talk Colby Covington. I know we touched on him earlier about being next in line at welterweight and maybe fighting RDA next, but it should be noted that he pissed off some of his followers on Twitter because he revealed the spoilers to the new Star Wars.
I don't want to talk anymore. I haven't seen Star Wars yet.
Me neither.
But you don't care. And I do. I do care. I'm seeing it on Saturday. I've had to wait a week because dipshit couldn't come to the movie last weekend.
So are you a big Star Wars aficionado?
I'm a nerd. I know all this stuff. Like, I'm not like a Star Wars, like, hardcore into it type of person, but I've watched all the movies and shit.
Okay. And, like, if you were going through your Twitter and you saw Covington with the spoilers, whatever happened.
Something and I got rid of it. I don't know if that's real or not. So.
Well, I mean, is that upsetting to you? Would that piss you off?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and I know that Luke Thomas wrote something about that. But even then, I wouldn't read what Thomas wrote because I was afraid that would spoil something.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's a big movie. This is only the eighth one of these. Well, kind of.
Okay. Whatever.
Like, again, though, all this, the one great thing about being a cage fighter is if he's matched up with the right opponent, no matter how much I hate him, I will pay money to watch him get beat up. Like, there's no such thing as your X-Pac go-away heat in MMA. What there really is always just you need the right opponent. And so if you told me that Colby Covington, you know, if say that he spoiled, you know, Avengers and Star Wars for me, and I was really, really mad, well, maybe I wouldn't pay money to watch him fight Damian Maia, because I'd be like, he might win, I'm not going to support that. But if, like, it was going to be, I don't know, Yoel Romero or somebody, I'd be like, all right, that's it. I'll watch a man beat his fucking ass in. This'd be great. It's kind of like how, like, with Paige Van Zandt, I watch her do shit because she's going to get beat up. Like, she's a perfect heel. It's like a 50-50 shot. She's going to lose every fight she's in.
Can next week we get your Star Wars review?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I remember seeing the first couple movies when I was a kid, literally, you know, 6-7 years old. Haven't watched any of them since. I might have saw, like, when they re-released one of them in the movie theaters, like, in the late 90s. I think I was still in high school, and I vividly remember, like, falling asleep during it, and I haven't gone back since. So I could care, and I think stuff like that is kind of amusing. Like, I'd never have an issue with spoilers. It's like, if it happened and it's out there, it's out there. If I find spoilers for fights or something and I hear it's a good fight, I'm more apt to go see it. If I hear the fight sucks and it's really bad, I might even watch it. If I hear nothing about it, I'm more apt to skip it. Like, I don't care. It doesn't bother me, but I guess more people don't want the surprise to be spoiled.
Well, also, you got to consider that a fight is 15 minutes of your life versus 2.5 hours of a movie.
Yeah. I guess. And like people still went and saw Titanic though, and everyone knew what was going to happen in that.
Yeah, but again, certain movies, it's like all certain types of stories. Some stories you watch because or read. It doesn't matter what Star Wars or whatever you read. You consume the story because you want to go along for the ride. Some of them, the surprise is the whole deal. It's like if you saw The Sixth Sense, if you never knew the twist, you'd be like, holy shit. If you knew the twist in advance, it's still a very good movie, but you would have missed out on a shared experience with other people. And so Colby Covington, he probably caused a divorce, is what I'm saying.
I'll be interested to hear what you think, because I did read some reviews and stuff. It's like critics seem to like it, but like hardcore Star Wars fans hate it.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
So
they're a breed unto themselves.
So I'll be looking forward to your review next week. In other Colby Covington news, clearly I'm a fan of this gentleman, even though I think he tries too hard. He got into like this Twitter war with Kenny Florian. And essentially there was UFC Tonight with Karen Bryant, Florian, and Tyron Woodley, and they were talking about paths to title shots for all these different fighters, and one guy who came
Speaking
up with
Speaking of Karen Covington, Bryant.
Yes.
I was going to probably do a piece about this. I don't know how it came to mind, but it just occurred to me today.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in our current environment of sensitivity mm-hmm. to women. That interview Rampage did where he tried to motorboat her, that's not going to age well.
Dude, how about the one, do you see the one where Rampage was like dry humping yeah. that chick?
That's not going to go well
oh
either.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I saw a hilarious tweet. It was actually Front Row Brian, who I'm not a fan of, but he had one where this He's like really overweight African-American gentleman threw this half-court shot and drained it and won 10 grand. He's like, check out Rampage Jackson drilling a half-court shot, and you click on it, and it looks like fucking Mabel is throwing it up from half-court, and you're like, holy shit. It literally made me laugh, and he rarely makes me even smile. So good job, Front Row Brian. One in a million tweets there for you. Anyway, so Colby Covington and Woodley are there. I'm sorry, I'm screwed up. It's Karen Bryant, Florian, and Woodley. They're all dressed up with like Santa hats and reindeer shit on because it's around Christmas, I guess. So they all look stupid to begin with. And then they've got like a board they're writing on and making a path for all these guys to get title shots. And Florian essentially had Covington having to beat several guys to get a title shot. So Covington wrote on Twitter, "We all know Two-Faced Tyron Woodley. We expect lies from him. But Kenny Florian, you were 5-2 and got a title shot because when people squinted, it looked like Sean Sherk was fighting Ben Stiller. You know better, simple Jack." And then Kenny Florian wrote back, yes, Colby Covington uses gay slurs, now trying his best to insult, referencing people with disabilities. A true class act, ladies and gentlemen. Bitch. Maybe after your lawsuit with Verdum, you can find the time for a title shot. Watch out for that boomerang effect." Then Covington wrote back, "Oh, hi, Kenny. I thought you got fired by Fox for plagiarizing. Must have been fake news, huh? Tell you what, after I beat Tyrone, I give you permission to come out of retirement and lose another title fight. You don't even have to be Alex Kit Karolexis, Kit Cope, and Sam Stout this time."
I mean, what is wrong with Florian? He comes across like such a bitch. Oh, you use gay slurs, and now you're trying to insult the mentally handicapped or some shit. Like, he quoted a fucking movie, asshole. A really funny fucking movie. One of the funniest parts of that movie. What a dumbass. He's just getting roast. You don't know who you're going into battle with. Don't fight people bigger than you. If you're going to be in there with a guy like Covington, you got to bring some real strong A game. Because he will embarrass you, and he does when he points out Alex Karolexis as one of your great victories.
So good. But it's like so immature and so stupid, but I still laugh at it.
That plagiarism went to fucking killer line.
That is a good one. Because people have forgotten about that. It's like anything.
But as soon as you say it, you go, oh, yeah, that's right. And you kind of like, that's one of those things about plagiarism. You're not totally sure what he did, but you go, well, he was accused of that. It seemed kind of credible. What a little bitch. Yeah, he cheats.
Something else that made me laugh this week was Firas Sahabi, GSP's head coach, claiming GSP would fight again for a super mega fight against either Floyd Mayweather or Conor McGregor next.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Conor one maybe. The Floyd, what is this Floyd shit? I mean, come on. I saw some article or whatever, they're talking about Tyrone Woodley says he'd be like happy to train Floyd Mayweather for a fight. I'm going, yeah, Floyd Mayweather's going to fly out to Milwaukee and get trained by Tyrone Woodley. Like, that's going to happen. Come on, people. Yeah, George St. Pierre and Floyd Mayweather.
How do you go from signing a contract that says you promise to defend the middleweight title and you talk about it in public multiple times to wanting to fight like a 145-pound guy who's never fought in a cage?
Oh, this dude's going to box him.
No, I think he wants to do MMA against Mayweather or Conor.
Oh, fuck, that's even worse.
Yeah, that was the impression I got.
Seriously, what's the point of that? Honestly, when you look at this, I know it's a lot of money. You can never turn down what is literally free money. But I've never really liked when I see, especially with fighters and call-outs, when you're punching down like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I hate when especially when the bigger guy is calling out the smaller guy for
bigger
money. Yeah,
that's a bitch move.
Yeah, and now you're calling out the guy who's much smaller than you and doesn't even fight. Why don't you just find some other random celebrity that's really famous? Why don't you just call out Kevin Hart? People buy that. He's smaller. He doesn't know how to fight. He's black. He's pretty much the same as Floyd Mayweather. So, yeah, let's see George St. Pierre versus maybe Chris Rock can get in on it. Yeah. Maybe Rob Schneider. I don't know what he's doing. Let's just go crazy.
Speaking of going crazy, a female MMA fighter is ready to knock out an internet troll who thinks he can beat her up. So there was this guy, I think, on Twitter.
That's pretty great.
Claiming women can't fight or whatever. And this woman, who's 7-0 MMA fighter, has offered to fly to Florida in order to fight this guy, Christopher Zelinski. According to comments posted on social media earlier this month, he claimed not even a woman trained in MMA would be able to beat him in a fight. He said 99% of women are too weak and lack the reflexes to do enough damage to stop 99% of men.
Yeah, he's right.
So you think 99%, the top 1% of women couldn't beat the bottom 1% of men?
I think that's a...
That seems like a stretch. I think Mia Hamm could like beat the shit out of everyone's granddad, probably.
That's because of Nomar, isn't it?
How about
I'm trying to
just
figure out
take
where the
Cyborg?
Fuck did you get Mia Hamm from?
I just picture her as like kind of violent for some reason.
Sure. Yeah, Chris Cyborg, Mia Hamm, yeah, 6½ dozen of the other. I get the two mixed up.
I didn't pick Cyborg. I was picking somebody like from a sport that's not known for being super violent, who I felt would be tough and could beat up some men.
If you took your average man,
yes,
beat the shit out of Mia Hamm. She's just too small. Like women are so. I mean, again, you look at a woman like Cyborg, and we go, "This is a gigantic woman," and she's 160 pounds, maybe. Like, that's a really small man.
What percentage? Well, yeah, I mean, what percentage of men could Gabby Garcia choke out?
Okay, if you're talking skilled women, okay, Gabby's a weird one. But, like, skilled women, the jiu-jitsu and all that, that's a little different.
Right.
Because, you know, you're just talking skill. But, like, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know how big he is and shit. I don't know how small this chick is. But he's got a way better shot at her than if it was a dude that size.
He wrote, "Even if they know Brazilian jiu-jitsu, they just don't have the size or strength to use the holds. It's dangerous to teach any woman to try and strike or fight a man. If you want to set up an MMA fight between me and a girl with signed contract, sure, I'm down. First of all, what guy says that?
There's nothing like, you know, I think that men are superior to women, and to prove it, I'll beat the fuck out of a woman in a cage fight.
Sounds like a good human being we're dealing with.
Sounds
here.
Sounds like a vicious man.
He did wrestle Stephanie. Then somebody wrote a Facebook page called McDojo Life. We are willing to pay out $1,000 to any pro female, 160-pound fighter willing to come in and spar with this man. We will also provide plane tickets and hotel. So this woman named Anna Dempster accepted the challenge. Now it looks like the fight might happen for real on January 6th.
Well, I mean, they're going to get in full training camps at least. I mean, we don't want to make this too much of a farce. Is this Florida?
I think she's flying into Florida, yes.
Of course it's Florida. Where else would a man beat up a woman to prove a point and get a lot of cheering for it besides Florida? It's going to be in the middle of Florida. It's going to be like in Jacksonville or some shit.
Jemster wrote, I am excited for the opportunity to shut this fucker up and feed him my fists. I am excited for the opportunity to prove him wrong and maybe even change his view of the sport and women in the sport and honestly women in general. I feel very confident in my ability to destroy him.
She probably will, but I don't know. I mean, if he's like a full-ass girl, like 220-pound man, she's going to hit her a couple times. Look at Bob Sapp and Nogueira. Like, that's probably about the size difference, you know, strength difference between a big, you know, 220-pound man and a 150-pound woman. In fact, I'm sure it's even more.
I'm guessing they were trying to find a 160-pound woman because that's about his size, okay.
Well,
I'm guessing.
I mean, yeah, he's going to lose, but if he knocked her out and just started clubbing her, is anybody going to be really that surprised? I don't know why he's doing it. Seriously, the best-case scenario is you beat the shit out of a woman. That's not a... You don't ever want to put yourself in a position where you're sitting there going, Harry, if I play my cards right, everybody will watch me kick the shit out of her. Just punch her right in the ovaries. And that's a good day. Like, nobody should ever wake up in the morning going, all right, I gotta go just grab a woman by the back of the head and slam her face in the cage. And that'll be a good day.
I think some of it's that internet fame bullshit. People want to be famous. And remember that story we talked about? It was months ago, but the guy who wanted his girlfriend to shoot him in the chest, he was holding a book or a Bible or something and didn't think it would go through the book. And it went through the book and he died. And the idea was they want to become internet famous because they're doing all these crazy pranks. And like sometimes you see those blooper videos where – you know, the kid dumps gasoline on himself and then is going to ride a skateboard and he lights himself up and he gets burned up and is running around trying to take his pants off. It's like there's so much of that shit from, like, the Jackass era out there.
They're called
that...
Buffalo Bills fans.
Going through tables and shit.
And then laying on the ground on fire. And then the guy jumps up into his feet like, oh, shit, I'm on fire. Like, duh, dumbass. That said, still, it's not beating up a woman. It's not even like this is some weird deal where you're being really competitive with a woman or something. Like, you're going to get in a fist fight with a woman. What the shit? It's probably like a young woman, no less. It's probably like you don't hit chicks. And you don't go on the internet looking for women to hit. That's a really weird hot. I don't know how you go on Tinder, and when the girl's like, so what did you do this weekend? Well, I had the culmination of this internet feud where I called out any woman in the world and I beat up. Like, this is what Andy Kaufman did as the heel. And everyone hated him for it, for a reason. This guy's Andy Kaufman, except for it's real. Maybe he'll get cancer and die.
I mean, he will die. We don't know how yet.
And Jim Carrey will honor him.
Have you watched that documentary on Netflix?
No, but I've heard so many good things about it.
I watched the first, like, 45 minutes, and to me it was kind of what I thought it would be because I'd always heard that he just stayed in character the whole time and is a fucking psycho, and that's essentially what it was. I, me personally, I'm a huge Andy Kaufman fan, like – Like, to me, that shit was like a game changer. And I think Borat totally, Ali G totally stole that script from him and brought it a little more modern. But yeah, the first hour or so was good and I fell asleep. I haven't gone back yet, but I only fell asleep because I'm old and I get tired now.
Oh yeah, no, Kaufman was a genius. You know,
he was fucking awesome.
It was funny. It's like when you look at what he does, what he had was, his stuff was legitimately funny. Like, it does hold up. But he was also one of the few guys in the history of comedy that was that kind of breakthrough and groundbreaking. Like, nobody knew what the fuck was going on.
And most people, I feel like most people hated him because they didn't understand it and they didn't get why it was funny. And it was funny just because it was different and he was fucking with people. Most comedians would go out there and tell jokes. He acted like he was from another country and could barely speak English, and he was born in America and like grew up in whatever, Tennessee or wherever he was from.
New York, I thought.
Is he from, maybe Bronx or something?
Yeah, Long Island or something. Long Island, as they say there.
I just remember stories of him like doing his impersonations in the mirror as a kid growing up constantly. And it was way ahead of its time and a lot of people didn't get it. And I just compare him. Like, I loved the Ali G show when it was on HBO because he would just fuck with people and people had no idea what was going on. And he could play. He did have Trump on, and Trump got pissed. And I think Trump took off, but I don't know how he got into those interviews or like the different characters he would play, whether it was Bruno or Ali G or Borat. It was like that stuff was amazing because it was just shot in a way where the people involved had no idea that it was a joke. And there was a lot of that with Kaufman too, where he just played a character and nobody got that he was in character. They thought he was really truly that person.
Yeah, I think that there's a number of reasons why Sacha Baron Cohen was more successful, mostly just the time we're in. But I also think that he tweaked that idea enough where it's kind of he was the butt of the joke. Whereas like Kaufman did it in a way where I think a lot of people watch it and they felt like he's making fun of them.
Yeah, and he's a little more mean-spirited.
Yeah, did some stupid stuff. He's fucking great, but like you watch like Borat. I remember people like, this makes Americans look bad or whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, most of the people look pretty good in this. Most people react in an inappropriate way. Like, the fuck is this? The shit is this going on? And then when he fucking... He just makes out and oh my gosh, it's glorious. Borat was so awesome. And the balls to attack Pamela Anderson like that, for real? Holy shit, he could have got the fuck beat out of him. Probably wishes he had. It would have been even funnier.
Yeah, some of the stuff he would say to people it was amazing. I can't even remember examples off the top of my head.
Yo.
That was literally like,
why are we so concerned with the youths in Asia? And I remember somebody just looking at him going, what? Huh? Are you that stupid? And he would just double down on it. Gotta find that stuff again.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through some of it now. I just remember there was one where he was at a wine tasting and he's just chugging the wines. Like, you're supposed to like swirl it, sniff it, and like spit, you know what I mean? He's just chugging glasses of wine, and acting like totally like appalled that you would spit the wine out. Just like basic stuff you would take for granted at a wine tasting.
I don't believe he spit it out, but yeah.
It's a thing. I know. If you're going there to taste wine, if you're going there to get shit-faced, yeah, you don't spit. But if you're actually going to taste wine and, like, buy wine for your business or whatever, you kind of have to spit. You're going to be fucked up in half an hour.
Yeah, well, when I do tastings, it's – like I get exposed to things. But I went to a tasting about 2-3 weeks ago, I guess it was.
Wow, you're so well-rounded.
I know. We talked about that.
You're very cultured.
I am cultured, damn it.
Ronda Rousey's back in the news again. This time because WWE is planning a Royal Rumble in January that's going to be all women. And the rumor is that Ronda is going to be in that Royal Rumble, likely winning it and going on to WrestleMania, probably for a women's title shot. I don't even know what that title's called, Divas title or whatever it is. Yeah, probably
because we need
to.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean that's the word on the street. I don't know how solid that is, but that's the strong rumor right now.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it plays out. I'm really surprised at. Again, I've essentially given up on all WWE except for the occasional pay-per-view, but I'm, like I said, surprised at how the women's division, this is plural, are still working out, and that they seem to be relatively serious. Like, yeah, the women are all kind of dressed there's an emphasis on sex with some of them, but for the most part, they're all, it seems like, in their real storylines and having their own shit. It's like, huh, look at that, they're, give them a shot. I would have never expected that to last. It seems like, if you didn't know, this company has maybe the worst track record in American corporate entertainment history when it comes to treatment of women. You wouldn't know it, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I also think it's gradually changed over time since I went to PG, too. There's not a lot of bra and panties matches anymore.
Yeah, no one watches.
Or guys beating up women. You know what I mean? Like, remember the Dudleys, like, were powerbombing Mae Young through tables and shit?
Oh, like, man, they beat the shit out of women back then.
Like Lita, remember Austin was, like, laying into Lita with chair shots at one point when he was trying to, like, get over as a heel? We're talking 15 years ago. Like, this is dated shit, and the game has changed, and the world has changed since then. But I think a lot of it was gradual anyway. And then with all the recent harassment news and everything else, it's like, oh, we got to play it a little more careful now.
Vince McMahon made an attractive woman strip down to her underwear and bark and crawl on her all fours like a dog, and nobody thought that was the first time he'd ever said that to somebody in his life.
Probably not. That remember, they were pushing that when Linda was running for Senate. Like, you were involved with the shit, you know? You don't think that cost her any votes, but even, you know, 6 years ago, that wasn't the best look.
Yeah, well, yeah, it takes time for society to come around to scantily clad barking women.
2 years ago this week, what happened?
Let's see. Last week we talked about Connor beating Jose Aldo. So what happened the next week? I know Star Wars Episode 7 came out, but that's all I have for you right now.
Nate Diaz beat Michael Johnson and called out Conor McGregor on Fox.
Was that really? Wow.
That was 2 years ago this week, which historically will be looked back on as a really big deal because he cut that promo about, you know, you're taking what's mine, I'm the real money fight, dropped multiple F-bombs.
That is awesome.
And he wasn't anywhere near McGregor at that point. Like, he had come off a loss where he had missed weight and shit and hadn't looked good.
I thought Johnson was going to beat him.
Yeah, and then Diaz gets this decision win, looks good, won the fight, came in, made weight, was in shape, and cut this crazy promo after, and then wasn't even going to get the fight until RDA got injured. And then it was really a toss-up between Cerrone and Diaz. And from the sounds of things, it sounded like Connor picked Diaz. I'm guessing he picked Diaz because he thought he was going to be in less fighting shape than Cerrone and thought it would be an easier win. I don't think at that time there was much of a difference in drawing ability between Cerrone and Diaz. Nobody really remembers that. But Diaz was never really a draw until Connor came along. And to me, Cerrone would have drawn just as well. You know, with the cowboy thing, I'll fight anybody anytime, doesn't give a fuck, that sort of stuff. So that promo really obviously changed Diaz's life and Connor's life too, because Connor became a much bigger star off those two fights.
Yeah, it's crazy when Nate did that and he started talking shit, and it was just kind of like we just gotten to the beginning of Connor Mania, which is funny because at the time I thought, well, this is the peak. Oh, little did I know. So innocent and naive. I hadn't been touched by the devil yet. The devil that is Conor McGregor. So.
Taking everything I work for, motherfucker. I'm going to fight your fucking ass. You know what's the real fight? What's the real money fight? It's me. Not these clowns that
security punk at the press conference. Don't no one want to see that. You know you beat them already. That's an easy fight. You want that real shit right here.
Hey, and I'm not. Unfortunately, you can't talk like that on Fox. Congratulations, Nate, on a spectacular victory.
And it got so much, like, publicity. Like, that promo really got over with people. But it was still Nate Diaz. Like, come on, really, Nate? And, yeah, here he is. A megastar for the ages.
The build-up to that first fight was amazing, too.
The promo in a fucking gym that they did.
Oh, it was amazing.
Lighting, but it was awesome. And Nate being all like, yeah, you're using steroids. You're all using steroids.
To me, I want to say that was the peak, but just Connor talking about calling him like a cholo, and with one hand he's doing gang signs, he's making balloon animals with the other. There were just so many classic live. Like, I went out of my way to watch those pressers like live because they were so good. There was even one on like, I don't even know what it was, like CNBC Money, where like she's asking him to count down to five, and Connor's like, oh, he can't even count that high, and the lady who's interviewing him's cracking up, and then Diaz just takes off. Just so many classic moments. That's like, to me, my favorite feud in MMA history. I don't know if we should call it a feud like that, but I
think it's a feud. That's totally a feud, because they're going to fight again, and all they've done is talk shit about each other. And it's great. And that's it. They just talk shit. Nothing's on the line. Just two dudes talking shit and getting in a fight. And that's biggest fights in MMA history.
And part of the reason it works is because there's like a realness there with both of them. Mm-hmm. I think Connor's pushing it in where it's like, he's full of shit. But there's still some realness in Nate Diaz. He seems genuine. Granted, he's an odd dude. He's not your typical human being by any stretch. But there's a genuineness, and I say it all the time, being genuine is key. It doesn't really matter truly like necessarily what you say. It's how you come off when you say it that matters. And if you can seem genuine, people will latch on to that, whether they know it or it's just a subconscious sort of thing. To me, that's what sells, is just being genuine and real.
Imagine putting Nick Diaz in there, because Nate's a little too small, but Nick in there with Mike Perry. I mean, my word, or Colby Covington. I want to see. I really like the. I love seeing a Diaz brother, and I think Nate's better for this stuff than Nick, because Nick is at his core just a little more introverted, I think, than Nate. Whereas Nate, I think is willing. He's a little more friendly. Kind of gets it a little bit more. So I don't know. Maybe Nick just getting trolled by Colby Covington could be great. I could just see him getting more and more pissed, and then getting wrestle fucked for three or five rounds. Oh yeah,
I would enjoy that. Wolf tickets, baby. That alone sold 200,000 pay per views. Remember that leading up to that fight, there wasn't much hype, and then that presser with him and GSP, he had like no showed the pre fight workout or something, and then like Ariel was asking Dana some questions, and then he interrupted him and Nick, and Dana's like, I know what you're going to ask. You're going to ask why he wasn't at the pre-fight whatever yesterday. And Ariel goes, yeah, I think it's kind of an important question. He's like, he doesn't have to answer that. Like, the whole thing just built so well. GSP's pissed. Nick's saying he's on steroids. Like, it was brilliant. But part of the brilliance was you really felt like that was how Nick felt. Like, I truly believe Nick thinks GSP is on steroids. I truly think he felt the UFC was building up a feud that wasn't there, making him the bad guy. And that's what made it sell.
Yeah. Now, that's what's great about the Diaz brothers. Like, especially Nick, he gets into this stuff way more than he should. This is why this is why these people have been involved in more than one riot.
True. Very true. Not any first run shows this weekend, but on Christmas Eve of all nights, we've got a UFC 218 replay on Fox. I guess last year they ran a replay on it Christmas Eve, and it did really well in the ratings, so they're going to do it again. That is the Holloway Aldo rematch and the Ngannou knockout of Alistair Overeem. So a good show to put on, one that would hopefully build some stars and get Ngannou a little bit more press headed into that January 20th title fight with Stipe.
Yeah, it's free shows. Why not? I don't care. It's Christmas Eve. I don't know. Talk to your kids or watch me. What are you going to choose?
Depends what time it's on. Let's see. I'll probably be wrapping presents that night. Rough life, I know. So this past weekend, not this weekend, but in the last couple days, there's been some NFL news. We're moving on to stuff, if that works.
Sure, yeah, go ahead. Just flow with it.
Yeah, I'm trying. I got fucked up here. Jerry Richardson, the owner of the Panthers, Carolina Panthers, is apparently trying to sell the team now because there's some sexual assault allegations coming out against him. He does not look like your typical sexual assaulter, not that they fit a specific profile, but he looks
is
older.
He rich?
And
yeah, is he white? Is he a man? Then yeah.
If you had a lineup of people you would guess sexually assaulted people, I feel like he'd be at the end of the lineup. But I guess you just can't judge a rapist by its cover, I guess. Yeah. But I haven't really found out what the allegations are against him, and it hasn't really come out in the press yet, except that he's just looking to sell the team and get out, which seems pretty sudden and to me screams that he must have done some fucked up shit.
Yeah, that's a big allegation. Getting rid of your football team. I know that it's the old boys network and you're not going to bring any dishonor to the Shield, blah, blah, blah. But, like, Jerry Jones got all kinds of weird fucking photos out there with him, like, groping on women and stuff. And he's still there. It's like, again, if you're worth... Again, I think that... I keep saying it again. The Panthers, I believe someone said, are worth around $2.5 billion, in part because they own their stadium.
Right.
So obviously he's a multi-billionaire. If you're a multi-billionaire and you can't get away with something, it's not illegal. Whatever he did, he's not been arrested for it. How can somebody that rich not buy his way out of problems? Like, what's the point of having $2.5 billion if you can't grab somebody's ass whenever you want? Seriously, what the fuck?
It's weird because I feel like if you have that much money, aren't people just kind of throwing themselves at you anyway?
Why do you sound so weird all of a sudden?
I don't know. I didn't do anything.
You sound like a robot alien.
How about now?
Still sound funny. That's weird. I wonder if it's just my headphones.
I'll unplug my mic and plug it back in.
Yeah, you do that. Such an asshole. This is a better show now, though. I don't have to wait for him to talk. I can just talk on my own. He can hear me, of course. I don't know what that is. I wonder if I'll ever make $1 billion. I mean, that's a lot of money. I don't even know what you'd do with that. Like, I wonder if you could waste $1 billion. I don't hear anybody now. I don't know. We really screwed the boot on this one. It's a hell of a production values we got here. I hope we don't have to restart. Let's sit up. Huh? Are you there?
How about now?
Yeah, now I hear you.
Hey.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know what happened, but...
I did a different port or jack or whatever that's called. The reason I bring up
you
this
sound
kind of
weird.
Thing,
you sound a little different now. He has a deep voice or something.
I don't know. I'm not meaning...
Anyways, let's go back to the rapist.
Yeah. The one funny part of this is that Cam Newton's already come out and defended him, which makes me question Cam Newton's judgment and the things he says. If you remember, he was dissing that reporter for talking about, routes or whatever. And it's just like, oh, this is funny, a woman talking about routes. And it was just like, shut up. Like, what do you do?
Now, why don't I hear you now? He's gone again. This is a hell of a show. I don't know what's up with that. I don't hear him at all. So I'll just continue on with whatever you're saying there. I think that Cam Newton wants to be really, really, really rich. Because when he's given interviews before, like during like the height of the Black Lives Matter thing, he kind of played like the most political. Well, we gotta take care of things, blah blah blah, and like he ripped a little bit for not being, Colin Kaepernick like strong. I think Cam Newton sees himself as I don't want to say it, but I'll say it, as a house Negro, and I think he wants to move on up. I think he wants to become a billionaire, him and Diddy. Maybe they'll buy the team. Man, I'm still not there. So, anyways, yeah, in other racist news, Richard Spencer didn't agree with net neutrality because he's an actual Nazi. Like, you know, Nazis believed in nationalization of industry, and so does Richard Spencer. Yet another reason to punch him if you see him. Don't, like, I have to be like, hey, everybody, don't punch him. As if there's a chance anybody listening to this is out there being like, well, I'm going to go track down Richard Spencer and punch him in the mouth. Yeah, so still don't hear Matt. I don't know what he's doing. He's probably playing around with his cord or something. So, does anybody text me? No, nobody texted me. I don't know that person is. See, everybody, what happens when you talk about the rich and powerful?
You know what? This is your fault, by the way.
Probably. You sound good now, though.
You made me screw with my knobs and whatnot over here. Anyway. So, yeah, Cap Newton should shut up.
Yeah. Next topic.
In other sporting news, did you see any of that Patriots game the other night?
Oh, shut up.
No, but I'm genuinely asking you that.
You know that I saw most of it, just not the important parts.
I've come to the conclusion that the teams that play the Patriots usually fuck it up and that's the Patriots win. Like, the Patriots are good, Grant, a lot of Super Bowls, great team, whatever. But, like, you're down by 3 points with, like, 10 seconds left in the game. You're on, like, this, I don't know, 8-yard line. You decide to, like, pass it and try and throw it in the end zone to win the game, like, when you could just spike it and kick the field goal. Like, the Seahawks in the Super Bowl passing it with, like, not a lot of time left on the goal line and throwing that interception. It's just like a lot of games where the Patriots win. Granted, they make a play, they get an interception, but a lot of times it's like the other team had a higher percentage chance of winning the game if they just did something different, and it's just baffling.
I think that's that's what makes people great. Like, the true legends in any sport are the ones who do pull off shit like this. Or just time and time again. You know, Michael Jordan hitting all these damn shots no one ever hit before. Like, just, there's outliers, and the Patriots are those outliers, and weird shit bounces their way, and they're always prepared to do it, unless they're playing Eli Manning for some reason. That fucking goober's got their number, and I don't know why or how, but he does.
It's amazing, too, with Eli, because he's been so average the rest of his career. Like, maybe even, like, sorry, all our New York fans or people who live in Connecticut. Eli's, like, I'd say slightly below average quarterback
the rest of the time. He's a
really?
He's a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Because he won those two Super Bowls.
So yeah.
If you look at the rest of his career, meh.
Yeah, but it's a pretty good, it's a decent enough career. And if you have a decent career with two Super Bowl victories, That's a good career.
All right. He got benched for that quarterback from the Jets.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're a dumpster fire this year. I don't know what the hell happened to the Giants. I mean, holy shit. They're worse than the Bears. At least the Bears have
a future. How old's Eli now? 30s? Mid-30s? Maybe?
I would guess mid-30s at least.
I think he's that old.
They do 30 for 30 documentaries on him.
The other story with the Patriots this week that caught my eye is Tom Brady's got this, like, personal, like, coach. His name's Alex Guerrero, who helps him with, like, training, eating, and staying healthy and stuff. And apparently for years he's been, like, traveling with the team on the selection of the games and, like, the first-class flights or whatever, the games, all these perks, and Brady's personal trainer or whatever. He's been helping some other players on the team and stuff. But just, like, over the last couple weeks, Belichick has barred this guy from everything. And I wonder what the backstory is there, what he's done piss Belichick off, if he's doing something shady. He's been accused of and arrested for different stuff over the years, and to me it kind of reads like the story of Victor Conte, kind of
Balco there. Yeah,
Balco, yeah. And it's like the fact that Belichick just banned him after all these years, I think for me speaks highly of Belichick. Like, this is the greatest quarterback of all time. You've given him this perk for the last half decade, and now you're taking it away. It's like, holy shit. Good on Belichick, but it also makes me question Brady, and I kind of always have. I don't know how a guy's 40 years old and in the NFL playing with a bunch of other guys who are probably, you know, taking HGH and all other stuff and is still so successful at this point. It's insane. He's the best quarterback in the league when he's, you know, 15 years past his athletic prime. It's just ludicrous.
He's a weirdo, though. Like, is this the same, like, diet guru that I've heard? I think this might be the guy I've heard before. Like, he's just totally full of shit. He's got all these, like, diet plans and shit that Brady hawks that don't make any sense.
He apparently, like, gets into clashes with, like, the team doctors, and Belichick basically said, we're going with the team doctors. We don't care what you say anymore. So they got into different things. I don't know if it's, like Buddhist-based or something, but it's, like, more holistic, I guess.
Yeah, he just made up shit. He's a big, like, pH balance in your foods and all this shit, which has zero medical stuff. He's pure pseudoscience, but, you know.
At the same time, it's working. You know what I mean? But I feel like there's something more sinister going on here. And I know you're not supposed to say that living in Patriots country, and I say it to people all the time, and they get pissed off at me. I'm like, think about it. More than half of the guys in the NFL are doing stuff. This guy's better than everybody else, double their age, and he's clean. Like, fuck off. So I just found it interesting that Belichick booted him, and a ballsy move on his part, risking pissing off the greatest quarterback ever, and the leader of the team who's won you 5 Super Bowls.
Well, you know what, though? If you're Belichick, he actually has maximum leverage now because Tom ain't going anywhere else. And he ain't got another shot. Like, he is old. This is his last run. He's got this year, maybe next. I mean, people keep saying that, but it does feel like this is this year or next year, and that's about it. So maybe Belichick's like, look, dude, you're going to do what I say. And also, I'm Bill Belichick. When you've been injured or you've been suspended, we still fucking won.
True.
You know, I got rid of Jimmy Garoppolo, and everybody thinks he's a really good quarterback. I don't even need a quarterback, motherfucker. I will fucking hand this thing off to Marshall Faulk or someone, and they can throw it.
Guerrero earned a degree in traditional Chinese medicine from the now-defunct Samra University of Oriental Medicine in Los Angeles.
I thought you were going to say Trump University for a second.
It follows a holistic approach that involves alternative therapeutic substances and nutrition plans, as he detailed in his 2005 book, In Balance for Life, Understanding and Maximizing Your Body's pH Factor.
Yeah, isn't it amazing how every time people have these, like, medical alternatives that just coincidentally, they require much less studying. It'd be one thing if it was like a, you know, rigorous 4 or 5 year course in studying all this, and they were just doing things totally different, but like they really, really worked hard. Still, you'd be like, I don't know, maybe it's a different approach. It's like, no, it's like a weekend or two, and then you buy the book, and that's about it. Like, yeah, I'm sure that all these doctors who study for 90 hours a week for 3 years and then don't sleep and they do the residency, just wasting their fucking time. And this guy's over there going, morons. All you have to do is go down the street to the Holy Unity Unitarian Buddhist Temple, get some beads and talk to the guy. And if you just found the right guy, that knowledge is so powerful that you don't need anything else. It doesn't take much to learn how to cure the fucking human body. That's not a tough one. Simple. You should, by the way, his brother has an engineering school. You got radical shit they're doing with the bridges and trains in Seattle.
Brady's bond with Guerrero, who is also his business partner, love became it. So strong that in 2010 he endorsed a beverage called NeuroSafe that Guerrero's supplement company marketed as a drink that protects your brain from the consequences of sports-related traumatic brain injury. The company claimed the beverage's results were scientifically proven. The FTC asserted Guerrero's claims were bogus. At that point, Guerrero stopped marketing the product and provided refunds to anyone who bought the drink. Brady said on local sports radio in 2015 that Guerrero has acknowledged making mistakes and has expressed regret for them. Brady said, that's part of growing up and understanding there are certain things that happen in life that you wish you didn't do. selling Gatorade that's going to cure concussions.
When was it? 2010 was that?
2010, yeah.
7 years ago. Presuming this guy's around Brady's age, he's still well into his 30s. He's not growing up and going, oh, well, I made a mistake. He's not an 18-year-old kid trying to hustle and make some money. He's my age. If I decided to sell people fake Gatorade, I would know I'm running a scam. Like, obviously, you did not create Gatorade to prevent concussions. Holy shit, the audacity of that. And yet Tom laughed it all up, probably because this guy and Giselle are just sitting there and they're just being like, look, he's really dumb. Just tell him these things, though. I'll work on him from this side. You do from this way. Bill will take care of him at work. We're good to go. All right? And this guy probably just pissed off Bill a little too much and he went too far. And now he's not even out of a job yet. You know what he was, though? I bet this guy looked at Tom and went, Tom, as I call him, looked at Tom, and he's like, shit, he's only got a year or two left. I'm going to need the next generation. And once he started fucking with the other players, Belichick's like, all right, hold on a second. So one thing you're doing with Tom Brady here, you're screwing out with real people, though. I don't want your voodoo horse shit coming near me, all right? Just get the fuck out of here. You're done.
Patriots chairman and CEO Robert Kraft told the Times that Guerrero's role with the team doesn't come without its challenges, but we have a coach that's accepting, and we have a leader of the franchise who's driving it. So Kraft is, like, washing his hands of it. Like, he wants nothing to do with it.
I like the fact that the fucking owner of the Patriots knows who this asshole is. This fucking little hanger-on loser. Do you ever see that quote, by the way? Speaking of Kraft, with Jerry Jones, that came out a couple weeks ago, when he was on the phone with Goodell after he found out that Ezekiel Elliott was going to be suspended, and he said, I'm going to make Robert Kraft look like a pussy. I'm like, holy shit.
That is pretty good.
And that's the kind of people that own football teams, so that's why I don't understand how Richardson's getting kicked out of owning the Panthers. These are men that tell a guy like Roger Goodell, who makes $40 or $50 million a year, they tell him, fuck you, I'm going to crush you. And it's a real threat. God, I wish I was that powerful.
Somebody who is powerful and looking to get into football is Vince McMahon. He apparently has gotten trademarks for some football-related terms. Apparently, he has created an LLC called Alpha Entertainment that was incorporated in Delaware back on September 6th. So we're talking over 3 months ago he started working on this. The same company filed for trademarks on URFL, which I'm guessing is Your Football League.
Oh, jeez.
Also in September, but a few days before Alpha's filing, VKM Ventures, a company bearing McMahon's initials, looked for trademarks for the Love of Football, UFL, and United Football League. So apparently Vince is looking to get back involved in football in some way. Word on the street is he's using only his own money. It's not going to involve the WWE. Obviously, last time they did this back in, I want to say it was 2001 with the XFL, they lost like $80 million, and it started out good. They did well the first couple weeks, and then the ratings tank, and the WWE, was it F at the time? Either way, lost a lot of money on it, and so did NBC. They were kind of joint partners. Nobody really knows for sure what Vince is thinking, if he's looking to take on the NFL again, if he has the support of the NFL. There's one theory that with all Trump's talk about players not standing during the national anthem, this could be like a conservative route, trying to get conservative fans over to the NFL, from the NFL to watch this league, which I can't imagine. Essentially, we don't know much except that Vince was looking into starting up a football league again.
Yeah, Vince is awesome. He's learned the lesson of Trump. Go for crazy shit, see what can happen. Like, see, it doesn't make any
sense. Trump will promote it for him.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah, Trump was involved in the first one on some level. Like, I feel like Trump was in, I saw Trump at one of them or something. Like, yeah, they're friends. Now, I do think that as Trump grows into the office, more and more he's isolating himself from the Vinces of his life. He's like, wait a second. You're still back there doing that stuff? I'm president. Maybe that's what Vince looks at and goes, God damn it, Donald's president. What can I do? Start a football league again. I mean, and, you know, this is what happens when you have a lot of money, you're old, and you don't care, and your legacy is, you promoted fake fighting really well. Ooh. But yeah, go ahead. Burn some more money on a fucking football league. Look, we have two professional football leagues. We have college football, and we have the NFL. Like, that's it. We don't need any more. He's better off just buying a team. Why can't he just buy a team like normal, rich, crazy people? The Panthers are for sale. He's got North Carolina ties. There you go.
I don't think he has the money to do it.
No, but if you don't have the money to buy one team in the NFL, you shouldn't start a league.
I agree. I don't think there's a marketplace for it. You think, like, maybe the theory is the NFL ratings are down and people are that pissed off about people standing for a song, but I don't really think that's real. I think most people still watch and aren't going to watch another league because of how the NFL handled the anthem. Like, I can't imagine anyone thinks that there's enough of an audience pissed off about that where you can turn a profit and make a lot of money.
I understand the mindset that he's got, and it makes sense in a Vince way. But yeah, I'm with you as far as I don't know what the market would be. I know the NFL ratings are down, and, you know, 11 or 15% is nothing to, you know, that's a big fucking drop. I don't know if college is down. If college is not down, then the NFL really does have a problem. It's probably more of a problem that Peyton Manning doesn't play anymore. Andrew Luck hasn't played this year. Aaron Rodgers is injured for most of the year. I feel like those things. And plus, the NFL just had a. It really does have nothing but bad publicity. It never has anything good. Like, the best news they have is the Super Bowl and the Patriots won it. And people are like, the Patriots, really? Like, the Patriots are heels, essentially.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just, you know, Deflategate or one player after another beating the shit out of a woman. Like, there's not fucking really high-profile abuse cases. Or we're finding out that all the players are dying every day. So, yeah, man, I don't know. I wouldn't start a football league. But maybe he's just looking for... Maybe Vince just hates people and wants to see as many concussions as he can. Maybe that's what gets him out of bed in the morning.
Yeah, it seems like a weird idea. And I just think he's old. It didn't work before. I can't see this turning out well for old Vince. Evan Longoria is going to the Giants. Is that significant?
Yeah, I just saw that news. That's a really good one. I mean, Longoria is not what he once was, but he's still a very good player, and the Giants have just nothing at third base. Just nothing. They haven't had anything in a while. So, yeah, I'm very happy to see this development. It's they got a hell of an infield there on that right side there. I mean, between him and Brandon Crawford, it's a good third base shortstop combo.
Did they give up too much to get him? Some guy named Arroyo was a prospect or something?
Did they give up Christian Arroyo?
Yes.
That's weird that I know the Giants prospects. He's kind of like, he was like the biggest name, I think, in the system.
That's the only reason I'm bringing it up.
Yeah. I mean, like, you're going to get a guy like Longoria, who's borderline on his way to Hall of Fame. Yeah, you're going to give up some quality talent. But the Giants are in a true win-now mode. I mean, Buster Posey's still in his prime. Belt's in his prime. You know, Baumgartner's still cheap, and he's a god out there. They got some, they got money tied up in Cueto and Samardzija. So, yeah, you know, in for an inch, in for a mile.
Also on the topic of the Giants, did you see Barry Bonds making sourdough bread online?
No, I did not.
Apparently, he's been putting out some Instagram videos or pictures or whatever. He's really taken to cooking recently.
Oh, I was hoping that's what you were going to say.
He is baking his own bread. He's, like, kneading it, and you got to let it rise. He wears a chef's coat that says Barry Bonds, Executive Sous Vide Chef, which really doesn't make sense because sous vide is, like, a type of cooking. Like, you cook whatever, usually it's a protein or something, like submerged in water at like a set temperature.
Yeah, I've read about that.
So that's a thing. That's, I mean,
so it's like keeping,
I want to say
they can warm, like really warm water for like a long time or something.
Yeah, essentially the idea is you can cook whatever, you know, your chicken, your steak, your burger, to a very specific temperature. You get it cooked all the way through to mid-rare, then you would just like sear it on the grill and you're done, and you can have a perfect mid-rare steak every time. You don't have to worry about overdoing it. Yeah, it's a cool way to do it. I mean, at restaurants it's tough to pull it off, but you know, higher end, more modern places will use it. And I mean, there's home ones you can buy now for $100 and use it at home. You just get a cooler and you set up a water bath and you put this basically like a heater that's, it's called an immersion circulator, that'll move the water and keep it at one steady temperature the whole time. And if you leave whatever the item is in there for an hour or 3 hours, it doesn't cook anymore because it's at that temp all the way through. You can't really overdo it. The quality of whatever the protein can go to shit if you left it in there for like days or whatever. But the idea is you can get a real set, precise way to cook it. And it also kind of changes the texture of it. I've played around with them, and it's cool. But my point with this whole thing is he's got this jacket that says executive sous vide chef, which makes no sense. You're a sous chef. That's like second in command in the kitchen. There's the chef and the sous chef. But sous vide chef, it's like it doesn't work. Like, it doesn't even mean anything. It's just odd that he has that. And maybe he thinks he's funny or something, or someone bought it for him and didn't know what they were buying him. Anyway, he's like making his own sourdough bread, and that actually looks pretty good. And making bread's a major pain in the ass. And another one, he's doing something with like chicken tenders, and he must be in his house and somebody's taking pictures of him. It's just kind of weird to see Bonds like even out in public. I feel like you never hear anything of about him. He's been in hiding the last decade.
No, he was the hitting coach for the Marlins recently. And
really?
Yeah, and by all remarks, he was very good at it. He didn't get brought back because they have like new ownership and everything. But I mean, everybody I've ever heard, like, Barry Bonds he's a legitimate genius when it comes to hitting a baseball. Like, I mean, he really knows how to break it down. But I'm glad to see, you know, he's doing cooking and stuff like that. I think it's important. I think, you know, I don't know if women do it, but I know us men, we need to be constantly learning and exploring and challenging yourself and getting out of your comfort zone. What could be more out of your comfort zone for a steroided, maybe falsely accused of steroid using baseball player than learning exotic cooking methods?
He is a lot smaller than he was in the early 2000s. I can tell you that.
You're not.
I'm not. Yes, my confidence is lower, but my size is not. I'm going to get back there, though. I'm eating a lot less snacks. Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming back for a 10th season.
Oh, good. Did they say when? No.
Let me look. I got to open up the article here, and we're getting there. Not a lot of tabs left. That's good. In September, Curb Your Enthusiasm cast member Jeff Garland slyly told Seth Meyers that the odds of the show returning for a 10th season were 49%. That number is now closer to 100. HBO announced that Curb has been renewed for another season, with production resuming in the spring.
Wow.
As I've said many times, when one has the opportunity to annoy someone, one should do so, said Larry David. So he's going to come back, which... I was under the impression this was going to be the last season, but he's ready to go again. I guess maybe they had fun and it did well in the ratings or was well received or whatever, and he's coming back, which I'm quite okay with.
He does seem like he's having more, like, it does look like he had a lot of fun with this season, and just in general, he seems to be happier in life. And I'm concerned about Larry David's happiness. He's only worth, like, $500 million or something.
Wouldn't it be cool if you were worth that much money and you're like, yeah, what the hell, I'll do another show again. Like, all these celebrities want to come on and be on your show. It's like, pretty good gig, I feel like.
He's a creative guy.
Oh, crap, I went out of order.
Yeah.
I was trying to stay on the sports topic. But did you see that this former NBA player, Charlie Villanueva, house was broken into?
No.
In Dallas? Okay, so I guess he played for the Mavericks. Do you know him at all?
Yeah, I know the name, yeah.
Okay. He was a former first-round pick. And he put these photos up on Twitter in a series of tweets talking about how his mind's blown, his house was robbed. He criticized the police for a slow response to the burglary report, saying he called four times. But what was most shocking was that they mainly stole appliances from the house, and the oddest one was his toilet. They literally unscrewed the toilet from the floor and stole his toilet.
Well, you gotta go, you gotta go. Man's gotta do his business. And
that's like a time-consuming thing. You need like a socket wrench, and you need to like undo the water and drain the toilet.
Yeah.
And take it and carry it out of the house. Like, they're not light. You can carry a toilet by yourself, but it's a pain in the ass and it's awkward. Like, of all the things in an NBA player's house, you're like, you're only in there for a certain amount of time. You're like, huh, I wonder how much that toilet's worth. Let's take it.
Yeah, that's a real, like, when you're talking, if you're a criminal, you got to get a good return on your investment there. And going to all the time and trouble and hassle to get a toilet, what are you going to, how much is a toilet worth? I mean, maybe it's a really great toilet, but, and you're going to put it in the bathroom of the restaurant we're starting with stolen shit that people like to fence, I guess. But I don't know what's the market for a professional athlete's toilet. You're going to sell it on eBay? You're going to put it in your house? You can't, how much is this toilet worth? $500?
Just not even.
Steal some,
not even.
Say he's got a great, say he's got the greatest toilet in the world. $1,000? It's a fucking toilet. Just go steal some jewelry. Like, the toilet's like the last thing you take in the house. When you've stripped everything from that place, and you're done, the last thing you're like, what should we take? Let's take the toilet.
But even when people move, they leave the toilet.
Yeah.
You don't take the toilet with you to your new house.
Take the fridge.
It kind of just comes with the house.
Yeah, you take the fridge first. You take the fridge,
maybe
stove, microwave, anything. There's every. I would take ceiling fans before I'd take a toilet.
But a lot of times, if you move into a new house, it's already got like the major appliances.
No, I meant if I was robbing a guy.
I understand, but like even that's a pain.
I assume they're not trying to furnish. I assume that when you go to furnish your house, you don't try to do it by stealing stuff from other people.
I know, but none of it makes any sense. Like.
You move.
A fridge is even heavier and harder to get out than a toilet.
Yeah, but at least a fridge.
You need like a two wheel dolly to get that out of there.
At least fridges can be very expensive and nice, and it's not weird. Like a toilet, it's a gigantic porcelain receptacle that holds turds. Why do you want to take this from someone? It's really. I can't think of anything in a house more personal than a toilet. There's nothing in a house, nothing of any value in a house that I would think is as intimate to a human being as a toilet. Fucking yes. Vibrators aren't as intimate as toilets.
It's an odd thing to steal. That's why I mentioned it. Yeah. I think we've talked about Puggles here on the show. I'm not a big fan, and this isn't really Puggle related. Have I told you about the new thing my dog does now? She, instead of just like peeing in one spot, she likes to like pee like across an entire hallway now. And she's done it like we've got like lighter tile floors in our kitchen. They're kind of white. So like sometimes if her pee is like kind of clear, you won't even see it. You'll be like, oh, I just stepped in something wet. And you think like the kids spilled some water or milk or whatever. And then you take another step and you step in again. And you're like, fuck, what is that? Then you like flip the light on and you look around. And you see it's just like a puddle of pee and then like a path of like piss drops like going for literally like 8 or 9 feet. So you got to get like a towel, clean all that up, then spray it down and clean it up again. Then you have a towel that smells like piss. And it's quite the production. It'd be one thing if it was just one spot, but she trails it now. It's amazing. Well,
use paper towels. Use paper towels and then you seal them inside of a Ziploc bag.
Yeah, I just use a towel and then I wash the towel. Yeah. I mean,
but
you?
Yeah. I don't. Have you consulted a vet? Like, that's not healthy.
Oh my God. There's so many issues with this dog. I think we've talked about it, but it's probably been a year or so. originally when we got her, she had like these bad allergies. And like she would lick her paws and her paws would get raw. She would like drag herself on the rug and like her whole chest would get all mm-hmm. all like chewed up and nasty. Like it would get like pussy and really gross. Mm-hmm. So for like 6 months we tried to figure out what she was allergic to. Like I went into this with like pure intentions and good thoughts. So we go in and he's like, you can do allergy tests, but it's like a couple $1,000s. I'm like, well, what are the other options? He's like, well, you can change her diet. Maybe she's allergic to something. Mm-hmm. So for like months, we made sure she didn't eat like anything except what we made her. Like I would buy fucking pork loins, trim all the fat off of them, cook them in a slow cooker, make like quinoa, and then we'd have to add all these like protein powders and different shit you had to buy online or like go to like the like Whole Foods doesn't even carry this shit. You got to go to like some more obscure like natural food store to get this stuff, and then mix all of it together. Then I'd freeze up big batches of it, put it in the freezer, and we'd break it out as we needed for her. She still had the allergies. So then he's like, it could be this or that. It could be environmental, whatever. So eventually we ended up putting her on a medication, which kind of relieved it for a while. Every once in a while it would flare up and we'd have to get literally like 6 different medications. They put her on steroids, all this other stuff for infections and stuff. And then that went on for, I don't know, I want to say probably 5 years. We would go through that cycle.
Puppy?
Where we were good for months, and then it would flare up again. Usually it was like with the change of seasons. So she could be allergic to pollen. It could be one thing they said it might be was human dander, like dust and the flakes that come off your skin, and there's nothing you can do to stop that. So eventually we got
her dog is allergic to you?
It's possible. Human dander is the term they use. Anyway, after all that, there's been other issues with her, too. She had, like, a tumor in her side that we had to get removed, and that was, like, $1,200. Now she's got this, like, big cyst on her thigh, and she may or may not have Cushing's disease. She has a tendency to drink. Yeah, she has a tendency to drink, like, a shitload of water at once. Like, if we give her water, she'll drink all of it and then have to piss, like, right after. So we got to, like, ration her water and, like, be careful how much water we give her. If we put a full bowl of water down, she will drink all of it.
Hmm.
So, yeah, very, very problematic. And then on top of it, she's just a jerk who, like, eats all the kids' toys and stuff on top of everything. But it's not like I don't care about the dog. Like, I've taken the dog to the vet 100 times. Like, I'm going to do the right thing even though I hate her because it's not her fault she's a jerk. And I'm stuck with her. And people are like, oh, you should just give her away. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to make somebody else have to deal with this shit. We're already 11 years in. There's only a couple more years left. So basically, that's my story of Puggles. And I didn't even get, like, into her, like, pissing on her bed and, like, having to come home and change all the sheets or going up to the kids' rooms and, like, eating their toys and Emma's stuffed animals or missing eyeballs and shit like that. Like, I haven't even touched on any of that. Or, like, when she runs away, she won't come back. She won't respond to, like, Lucy come like a normal dog. And previous to all this, before I was probably – let's think about this. She's 11. So I probably got this dog when I was 27, somewhere in that ballpark, 26 maybe. Prior to that, I grew up with 2 Westies, West Highland Terriers as a kid. Moved to a new house, got a Yorkshire Terrier. A second Yorkshire Terrier. They had 5 litters of puppies. We sold all the puppies, kept the last runt from the last litter. So, like, literally, my first 25 years of life, always had dogs. Always had dogs. I've never seen a dog like this Puggle in my life, and I've sworn off dogs because of her.
Now I want to just finish this show so I can go play with my dog.
Ah, strangle it. Anyway, this story is ridiculous and it's a little disturbing, but I know you like that sort of thing, and I don't know if you've seen this one. 2 dogs mauled their owner to death while she was walking them in the woods. Have you seen this?
No.
Would you like to hear more about it?
It sounds like something I think your dog might want to hear about.
Bethany Lynn Stevens had gone for about a day since she left to walk her dogs. So her father went out to look for her at the area she frequented. There, authorities say he found her 2 dogs guarding what he first thought was an animal carcass. Much to his horror, he discovered that it was not. Investigators in a rural community in Virginia called Goochland About 30 miles outside of Richmond, say the petite 5'1" young woman who weighed a little more than 100 pounds was mauled to death by her dogs, which had a combined weight of about twice hers while out on a walk earlier this week. Her father found her Thursday evening in a wooded area that used to be a farm about a half mile from the main road. The dad described the dogs as very large brindle-collared pit bulls, although the specific breeds of the animals are unknown. The dogs clearly, at least in our estimation, in a dark night had something to do with this. It was an absolutely grisly mauling. In my 40 years of law enforcement, I've never seen anything quite like it. Hope I never see anything like it again. Like, how the hell do you go for a walk with your dogs and they, like, you've had these dogs for years and all of a sudden they attack you and fucking kill you in the woods?
Dog,
it's fucking crazy.
Dog eat dog world out there, man. That's fucking weird. Makes me wonder if something else is happening there, yeah.
Well, it said, we spent a lot of time there at the scene and made some observations that, out of respect for the family, were not released.
Okay, there you go. Fucking the dogs.
A woman was fucking the dogs?
Sure, why not? What else is going on with the dogs?
That's more of a dude move.
Chicks are fucking weirdos too. Seriously, what else?
How do you get a dog to fuck you?
Oh.
Like that can't...
I have no idea how it happens, but it does. If horses fuck people, I saw that.
I'm sure you have. It says, it appears she was taken to the ground, lost consciousness.
That's a great joke. Norm MacDonald's got a great joke about that. But bestiality.
This might not be the time, but go on.
It's like, you know, there's this people's, you know, getting this pig. It's a story about a pig fucking a woman. Yeah, but imagine if you're the pig. You gotta go back to fucking pigs after that. Like you know what you could be doing. Instead you, it's no good.
It appears she was taken to the ground, lost consciousness, and the dogs mauled her to death. There were no strangulation marks. The victim had puncture wounds in the skull, and this was not a homicide.
Holy shit, man. What did they say happened to the dogs?
We don't know yet, but the family wants them euthanized.
I bet that's a gimme.
That story is gave me the heebie-jeebies, so I wanted to share it with our one listener. Lastly, we've got Christmas coming up. You've heard about that. You're into Christmas, right?
I am.
A California man tried to burglarize a business by entering through the chimney, only to become stuck. Police in the Sacramento area city of Citrus Heights said Friday that 32-year-old Jesse Berube was uninjured but now faces one count of burglary. According to police, Berube slid down the chimney of the business Wednesday and then found himself lodged inside. The Rockland man was able to reach his cell phone and dial 911 for help. The Sacramento Fire Department responded and used special equipment to extricate him. Police called Berube a criminal Santa who does not have the same skills as the real deal.
I bet the cops weren't his first call. Like, if you try to rob a place and you get stuck in the chimney, I would call a friend first, be like, you got to get me out of here. And I would imagine that phone call went something like, I'm stuck in a chimney. And I could use some help, click. And at that point, you call 911. You're like, all right, well. And I bet even when you call 911, I bet the whole time he was in there, he was sitting there to himself going, all right, what kind of story can I come up with this? I saw something. I slipped. I'm a roofer. I tripped and fell down. He probably has some sort of crowbar with him or something. But just the season, you know? Got to practice. Maybe he's a father. You know, has anybody considered this guy's... first of all, I guarantee this guy's a father. I'm sure this guy's got one or two kids out there. But maybe this is a dad, and he's just going on a dry run because he wants to make a really special Christmas day for his children. And instead, these motherfucking cops, once again, the government, the cops, which are a branch of the government, participating in the war on Christmas.
I'm impressed he was able to get stuck in the chimney. You get down a certain distance, and you would think a chimney is the same width or diameter, whatever you want to call it, all the way down. So he gets stuck, but somehow he still manages to get his cell phone out of his pocket.
Yeah.
Like, if I was wedged that tight in a chimney where I needed to call for help because I was trying to rob a place and got stuck in it, I don't think I'd be able to get my cell phone out and dial 911.
Unless somebody turned the chimney, fireplace on.
Like Child's Play, Chucky?
That's pretty much the only explanation I can come up with for why you'd just panic and be like, oh, fuck, I gotta call the cops. I gotta call the cops. Yeah, I'm at 37 North Main Street. I'm in the chimney. Yes, I'm in the I was trying to rob the place. They started the fire. Please come quick. Yes, I know what I said. Yes, I'm in the... Yes, you can bring a camera. Just get me out of here, all right?
Last week we talked a little bit about Home Alone being a Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. And this past week, ironically, Macaulay Culkin showed up at an indie wrestling show with like Joey Ryan and like interfered in a match, but he did gimmicks from Home Alone. Like he threw like marbles on the floor on the mat and all the guys took bumps on him. Then he hit him with like a can of swinging paint and I think he splashed a guy and pinned him or something. But it kind of made some news and was kind of an underground story. And I just found it funny because it was like literally the day after we talked about Macaulay Culkin that this story came out.
I did not know that Macaulay Culkin was that cool. I know that he took Mila Kunis' virginity. A motherfucker.
You were there for that?
Yeah. I was in the chimney.
Yeah, like Hornswoggle was in the match. Very weird scene. But the crowd was chanting Culkin and Home Alone during it.
Indie wrestling people.
It's a very odd business. I saw pictures of Culkin probably like 5-6 years ago where he looked like he was on death's door.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see those?
Oh, yeah. He looked like shit for a long time.
Yeah, he's a weird dude, weird child star who kind of just... I feel like he doesn't do anything in acting anymore. He's just living off that Home Alone money, right?
Yeah, hey, you know. Got a good gig. I know he's on heroin for a while.
Is that
what? It happens to us. You know, you can look. Why not? You got a lot of free time and free money. I mean, it must feel good. People keep doing it. Even in the face of death, people are like, nah, this is worth it. I'm going to give it a shot. They never talk about that. Although, speaking of heroin, this is a good way to close. I think it's your state. Your attorney general there? Yeah, it's your state. Because there's a new ad campaign trying to, you know, get people to not abuse opiates.
Weird.
Yeah, I know. It's a campaign, you know, they're going to make two phones and I hear myself sell nothing from an aspirin. Here's a Vicodin. Can you tell the difference? And so on. It's whatever. It's a new drugs for 2017. Your attorney general there, some chick, has come out and condemned this campaign, according to Tucker Carlson. I assume Tucker's telling the truth. Because it's... Well, on this one, I doubt that he's like, this isn't, you know, the WorldNet Daily making shit up. Because she thought that it stigmatized opium, drug addicts. Yep. It stigmatizes drug addicts. We don't want to stigmatize people that are hooked on opium. No. Heavens no. That's not exactly. And much older children die. I care about children, you see. Why can't they just make this shit legal? You know what's better my life would be if I could just go to the store and buy Vicodin? Fuck, that'd be a... Life would be so much better that way.
Would it?
Yeah.
Why?
Because my foot still feels like it's broke, and that would get rid of that pain, and...
What did you do to your foot?
It was actually happened last week on this show. We were talking that I had a cramp in my foot, and every once in a blue moon, I get a super bad cramp in my legs, and this one happened in my foot, and it's been hurting ever since. It feels like the times like it's broken, but I know it's not broke because I can walk on it and push it. But yeah, I really cramped it up. Anyways, point being that I need.
Is it like in the arch?
No, on the top of the foot.
Huh.
Yeah. So again, my point being, I need a bottle of Vicodin.
Yeah, that will help you.
Yep.
Absolutely. So, yeah, an ad campaign against opioid addiction is drawing criticism. I see that. Federal officials in Boston unveiled a multimedia ad campaign Wednesday about the risks of using opioids and immediately ran into controversy as addiction specialists assailed the ads as stigmatizing and counterproductive. I mean, I haven't read the rest of the article. I read that first paragraph. But immediately off the top of my head, I think most people who use opioids know there's a risk.
Well, yeah, but the same way you
nobody's
say
like, ah, oh, this heroin.
Yeah, but
this will be good for me. Nobody thinks that.
Then we don't need anti-smoking campaigns either.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you.
And nobody worried about stigmatizing smokers.
We hope this campaign will help people make the right choices, that it will help them to resist the risk of selling and sharing prescription painkillers and illegal drugs. Which makes sense. I'm just trying to find the argument in the reverse.
I kind of get, I do understand that on, you know, things like drug addiction and such, that you have to walk a fine line between, like, making sure you know, tell people why you shouldn't do it, why it's bad, without moralizing about it, to where it does, yes, legitimately become stigmatized. Like, you want people to feel like they can go get help and not that they have to hide it away.
Right, well, it gets back to that whole thing. Are people choosing to do this, or is it a disease? Is it an addiction that, you know what, that people need help to solve? And it's one of those things that depend. I know, and it depends who you ask. And some people can quit easier than others, and people have a more addictive personality, whether it's based on something that happened earlier in their life, or if it's hereditary, or whatever it might be. Everybody's got a different story.
Yeah,
and
I was listening to Dr.
Hard to walk in somebody else's shoes.
I listened to a lot of Dr. Drew, and he was talking about that. And he's legit, man. And one of the things he said when it comes to addiction is there are certain substances that are just addictive. Pain pills are a good one. He says you do not have to be an addict to become addicted to them. It can just happen on accident. However, there are other things that people get addicted to that not everyone does, like alcohol. And the thing is that what makes you at a risk is if you're genetically predisposed and you have some kind of like childhood trauma shit. Like, when those two things happen, mm-hmm. you're like a lock, basically, to get addicted to it. And that makes me a hero, because I'm not addicted to alcohol, really. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Of particular concern is the ad showing a baby with an intravenous line in the arm and a feeding tube into the nose. The first weeks of my life were spent in detox, it states, listing symptoms babies experience when withdrawing from opioids their mothers took while pregnant. A newborn specialist at Beth Israel Deaconess said it's dangerous to suggest that pregnant women should resist the drugs they are addicted to. A pregnant woman addicted to opioids can harm herself and her fetus if she suddenly stops using.
Well, that's advice I didn't expect to hear from a doctor.
Yeah, I mean,
can you roll? Doc, I'm addicted to Vicodin. Here's five more.
Women who are addicted and seeking recovery are prescribed methadone, Ken Shamrock's favorite drug, or buprenorphine throughout their pregnancies, and their babies are still at risk of undergoing withdrawal. But that's not a terrible thing. Babies in withdrawal receive comfort and breastfeeding as their primary treatments.
Okay.
The terrible thing is a pregnant woman who is not seeking treatment for opioid use disorder. I mean,
there's caring and there's trying to be sensitive, and they're saying it's not necessarily a bad thing if a newborn baby's going through opiate withdrawal because she gets to be held and breastfeed. Guess what? They get to do that even if they're not trying to kick heroin.
The Boston Globe, that's where this article is, which is a decent paper. It's fine. The top 10 trending articles. Number one, Bill Belichick curbs privileges of Tom Brady's associate Alex Guerrero. That's the number one story in Boston. Number two, Bernard Law should be remembered for what he was, an enabler of abuse. He's like that cardinal who, like, molested a bunch of kids. Then third down is, watch the moment Isaiah Thomas found out he had been traded. Fourth down is, Matt Damon is right about sexual misconduct. After that, we have Boston racism image reality. The Spotlight team takes on our hardest question.
Yeah, they're the Spotlight.
I'm going to keep going. I'm just going to give you all of them. Chappaquiddick trailer does not go easy on Ted Kennedy. Why are so many Red Sox fans eager to see Jackie Bradley Jr. traded?
They're racist.
The man flu may be real, but many women and even men don't want to believe it.
And women are bitches.
And then Cardinal Bernard Law died.
Oh, my God, he made it twice. Good for him.
That's quite the city.
So your entire town is raping children, being racist, and worshiping Tom Brady.
Essentially.
Yeah, Boston, everybody. Boston.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you go shoot some more people in Chicago, all right?
Hey, I have a FOID card now, so I can go do that.
I don't even know what that means. Oh, fire? What is that?
Firearm owner's card. Identification card.
Is that new? You didn't have one before?
No, I just got one. I was drunk last month, and I thought, I'll apply for this online. It's $10. I wonder if I can get it. And yeah, I got a FOID card. It's good for a decade.
So what does that mean?
I can legally handle a gun.
Do you have, like, gun stores around? You could go buy a gun?
Yeah, there's actually one literally right down the street.
Okay.
So owned by a family, if I wanted to go.
So what do you do? You apply online.
Yeah, you apply.
What's the process?
You apply online, and then they run you through whatever background that they do here in Illinois. And then a couple weeks later, I got the card in the mail. I was like, oh, yeah, forget about this.
So now you would take the card to your local gun shop, and you could buy a gun.
I think so. I'm not really I'm guessing there might be something else I have to do. I'm not sure. I know that, like, I was bored one day. I was looking at, like, shooting ranges around here. I'm like, if you ever want to get a gun, I should, like, you know how to use it. And I saw, right, it was, like, you can, like, rent guns. And I'm like, this could be kind of cool if I could rent a machine gun or something. I think you have to have a valid FOID card in order to even, like, rent one at the range and shoot it. So I'm like, well, I better have a FOID card. Then I'm like, yeah, damn right I want a FOID card, motherfuckers. I want to own me a gun. And then I looked online, and I can get a badass, like, six shooter, like a cowboy used, $200.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy a gun.
Were you pissed off that you had to spend $10 to get it?
Apparently not.
All right. Never know with you and giving the government money.
Well, it's the cost of doing business. You know, some prices you got to pay in order for freedom. Freedom is not free. There we go. Freedom is not free.
I think you got to have some kind of license in Massachusetts to even get, like, pepper spray. I don't know if that's the rule everywhere. Because I feel like you can order it online, too. So I was looking at that once.
Massachusetts, you need a license to get pepper spray, but we're okay with detoxing babies.
You should never pepper spray a baby, by the way.
If you do, it's good for the baby because the solution is just to comfort it and breastfeed it.
Breastfeeding is actually really good for babies.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, but it's not like on the one hand, you're addicted to heroin. On the bright side, though, you get to breastfeed a little bit.
What are you doing for Christmas?
Christmas Eve will be spent with my mother and my brother and my new sister-in-law. We'll go to church.
Does she come over for the last few Christmas Eves?
Yeah.
It's like okay.
Yeah.
So nothing unusual there.
Yeah, I think she's been at all of them since they've been dating. I don't know. Just 5 years now. So yeah, we'll go to church. We'll come back. We'll eat dinner. We'll do.
What time do you go to church?
I don't know. Whenever my mom says. I think it's 5:00.
Okay.
I think we're going early service, and then we'll come back. We'll do the gifts with her. Then on Christmas Day, my brother, and I will do something in the morning. Actually, no, Brian and his wife are going to do something really early in the morning. They're going to exchange their gifts. And then he's going to come down and do gifts with us. And then he's going to go back to her family and do gifts with them.
So they're going to split up on Christmas Day.
For part of the day, yeah.
Interesting.
Because I think it's like he's going to be down here while she's at her mom's house, like, helping get dinner ready and shit.
So I think that's a bad sign.
That's what I told him. I told him
they should be splitting up on Christmas Day. That's weird.
Yeah, but... And then he'll go back and rejoin his wife, and I'll hit the bottle. Okay. So,
because what you really do is Christmas Eve you spend with one half of the family, and then Christmas Day you spend with the other half.
I think that's basically what they're doing. But like I said, I have a feeling that a lot of it's she doesn't want him.
Brother Brian's double dipping.
She doesn't. I don't think she wants him around bugging them.
Maybe.
Smart woman.
That could be the case. And do you have all your gifts purchased at this point? No.
No, I think I need to get my brother at least one or two. I haven't really bought my brother anything. My car broke this last week twice.
What?
I needed a new alternator.
Ooh, battery wouldn't go, huh?
Yeah, like, it's been having issues for a couple of months now, and so I've always been, like, very afraid. So, like, I don't really drive my car much, because it would just randomly shut off sometimes. But I was kind of making it work, and then, like, finally, last Monday, on the first, like, significant snowfall. Did I talk about this last week?
No.
Huh. I wonder why I didn't. Yeah, like, on the first significant snowfall that Monday, right after I come back from Vegas, it just wouldn't start. And I'm at the train station. I'm like, fuck me. So I had to tow it to the shop. And they said, oh, well, you know, there's just the battery that's a little loose and these cables are fine. I'm like, and they're like, it's all fixed up. I'm like, great. So I picked it up on Tuesday, drove it Wednesday, it's fine. Drove it Thursday, it's fine. Friday morning I come out, boom, not working at all. I sat in that car and I started swearing. I was screaming and swearing. I'm like, you motherfuckers, you fucking crooks, you stole from me, you fucking dickhead, you grease monkey motherfucker. And I'm just swearing and screaming at the fucking car. And eventually I took an Uber to the fucking train, and I made somebody come pick the car up and drive it over, some tow it over, and they do the diagnostic thing. Like, oh yeah, it turns out this one diode on the alternator is gone. We couldn't discover it before, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, $600 later, I'm like, fuck you. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's awesome when your alternator goes because the car totally dies. Like, you lose the power steering. Like, that's happened to me a couple times because I drive my cars into the ground. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, towards the end, the alternator goes. And, like, literally, you can, like, coast down hills.
Yep.
But going up hills, you can't, like, give it any gas and it dies on you. One time I was trying to get my wife's car home, and it died literally while I was crossing the street. And I was just stuck in the middle of the road. And I literally, my wife was following me. She had to pull up next to me in the middle of this, like, busy road and jump the car so we could get it out of the road because I couldn't even shift it. Like, there were people outside yelling at me. They're like, put it in neutral. I'm like, the shift is, like, stuck. Like, it will not move. I can't do anything. So we literally had to, like, stop traffic on both sides, jump the car, and then, like, push it and get it into my neighborhood. It was awesome.
Yeah, fuck cars.
Good day. And then probably when I got home, there was probably piss and all the pillows on my couch were chewed up.
And on that note,
thanks for listening to MMA and stuff. Merry Christmas, everybody. We should be back next week, even though it's school vacation week. We are hardcore, and we'll bring you a show, I'm sure. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Get up, cocksuckers, it's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria, the other one, Puerto Rico, Houston, fucking Florida. Listen, it's been tough up to now. The earthquake in Mexico, you know, the White House, whoever the fuck is going on. But it don't matter. They want to shoot, it's time for us to fucking shoot, cocksuckers. They want to get down and dirty. Don't forget who the fuck we are. You understand me? We're the baddest motherfuckers out there. You send a message to that fucking North Korean, he's going to be sniffing my dick and sucking my asshole. That's the focus. We're going to North Korea in like a year. It's going to be an island. It's going to glow in the dark. You know why? Because we're Americans, cocksuckers. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Stop with the gun control. They're selling more guns than ever the last 3 days. Stop with the fucking whining. Stop with the Russians on Facebook. I don't give a fuck. Worry about yourself. Keep your eyes open. And get the fuck off Snapchat and fucking Twitter, cocksucker. Stay black.